Ladies and gentlemen, the story you're about to see is true. The names have been changed to protect the innocent.
Online, worldofwrestling.com presents your number one action and comedy radio show based around the world of professional wrestling. OWW Radio.
The King of Kings goes back on his throne.
The champ is here.
To be the man.
You gotta be the man.
Woo! It looks like there's a new sheriff in town.
And man, is it about time.
And this is not a mirage. This is real. This is here. This is now. This is the second coming.
Now your host, Alan. What's his name? Wojcicki? Wojcicki?
Your house started to shake, the heavens opened up, and God himself spoke to you and said this.
Wojcicki, is it? It's Wojcik. Alan Wojcik. Do I really need to write this out for you? God.
Now, your host, Alan Wojcik.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Online World of Wrestling Radio, brought to you by the folks at the Wild Talk Radio Network. Each and every week we're here, weather permitting or not, head cold permitting or not, stomach flu or not, which is what my two-year-old's got. 267-297-1397 is the way to join us on the program. If you also are a member of the Skype Nation, you can Skype Sir Rockin', that's two words, and you can join us on the show. Unless there is a natural disaster hitting Nashville, Tennessee this evening, the author of not one, but two books, Dirty Dutch Mantel, will be here tonight to talk with us. We had originally announced Sean Oliver, but due to circumstances beyond Sean's control and a movie shoot today, he will be joining us next week. Also on next week's program, we had him on during a Peterson Cup talk and professed his love for college football, which made Spug perk up, and he said, all right, he's coming back. Well, the campus legend Brad Allen will be here next week to go head-to-head with Spug in Bowl Championship Series College Bowl Game Picks. We will break down all the fun that is TNA Wrestling. We'll get a recap in of Final Battle 2010 and all the interesting stuff that happened on the iPay-per-view. We'll also delve into the wonderful world of World Wrestling Entertainment, who had us all watching the TLC pay-per-view. Music tonight is brought to you by NXS, which was fronted by, unfortunately, the late Michael Hutchins. If you're listening to that going, yeah, but didn't they have a new singer? No, we're not playing any of the bastardized NXS. You know, JD Fortune here. Go back to Unknownville, my friend. My mind NXS stopped on November 22nd of 97 when Michael Hutchins unfortunately took his own life. If you're a fan of the band, you know that there's not one, not two, but three members of it with the last name of Ferris. That would be Andrew, John, and Tim. Kurt Penningley is their guitarist and sax player. And also Gary Jerry Beers was on bass guitar for a lot of them. So we'll be channeling in NXS during the evening. And we thank you for being with us. Due to the way my office is situated, I'm not watching SmackDown, Tuesday Night SmackDown. Curse you, WWE. And it's cool that they're getting their talent off the air on Friday so they can, why run wrestling on Christmas Eve? But as we've learned from many of our guests, that was the way of the territorial days. New Thanksgiving, Christmas were your big wrestling days. Now, not so much. We do have panelists, as always. Jason Dedrich will be joining us at some point. Spug, we hope, will also be joining us at some point. We do have, and it wasn't done to make him happy, because I don't even know if he likes in excess, but our Australian contingency of the Wild Talk Radio Network, he's on OTL, he's got his own podcast called Bashing the Books, he's on Wrestle Talk Radio. Mr. Mace is joining us. Good evening, sir.
Good evening, Alan.
And we don't have any stick figures for you, but we can probably draw some from the TLC pay-per-view if you'd like for later on in the show.
No, it's okay. I got a 7-year-old little brother who can do that for me.
Hey,
he probably was involved in the production. I know he was sending out some preliminary stick figure artwork at one point, so I don't know. It depends on if we get that check from Vince or not.
Excellent. And they've been away from us for a little while because real life gets in the way sometimes with our show. But we don't have Ari tonight, but we do have from In This Very Ring, which is a very popular blog and a podcast, out of the North, Sarah Deigen joins us. Good evening and welcome.
Hi, guys.
There she is.
Yes.
Yeah, she's dealing with young ones like I do, except her young ones aren't exactly fans of our program. They're letting daddy's being kept, so we won't keep mommy too long.
Yeah, exactly. I think he's going to need some backup pretty soon.
Yes, and we're glad we don't have him, because from what Mrs. Ari just told me, not the Mrs. Ari from Entourage, Mrs. Ari just told me that Ari fell asleep during TLC pay-per-view, which I'm sure some of us might have as well. We will take a few minutes to... There goes my daughter in the background crying. She's not a happy camper, and it's not because Daddy's on the air. It's because John Cena closed a pay-per-view, but we'll get to that in a minute. For fans that did not watch the event, we found out from our friends that were there live, the pre-show match was actually the U.S. champion Daniel Bryan defeating Ted DiBiase. The Intercontinental champion Dolph Ziggler, as we saw on Monday Night Raw last night, retained, defeating the All-American American Jack Swagger and Kofi Kingston in a ladder match after they pulled out one of the old TNA Ultimate X match finishes, where Ziggler found the belt and said, "Hey, mine, thank you." Natty Neidhart and Beth Phoenix took out Lay Cool in a tables match, where Natty actually took out both members of Lay Cool, which was pretty cool. The WWE Tag Team Champions in one of the matches that was not a TNL or a C match defeated the Nexus via disqualification when Joe Henning got caught being involved. Wade Barrett came out and said, "Oh, really? I'm going to show you what I can do with a chair." John Morrison defeated Sheamus to become the number one contender despite having an injured knee throughout the match, which was very entertaining, and we'll get to that in a second. As we noted, as you saw on Monday Night Raw, The Miz still has the championship. Some interesting chicanery there, and we'll get into it in a second. The match that many of us thought should have been the main event, Edge became the, I believe, 10th time world champion. He defeated Rey Mysterio, Alberto Del Rio, and Kane in a TLC match to make the pay-per-view any longer than it possibly could. We had to deal with Dashing Cody Rhodes, Santa Big Show, and the Bella Twins. And as mentioned, John Cena defeated Wade Barrett in a chairs match after hitting an attitude adjuster in the 6 chairs, despite the chat room I was watching with going like, "You marked out for that? It doesn't hurt." I said, "Look painful to me." Cena had taken out the Nexus throughout the evening, and he actually took Barrett out, as you saw on Monday Night Raw, with, according to CM Punk, 25 chairs fell from up above. And then again, Jimmy Snuka jumped from 75 feet onto Don Morocco in Madison Square Garden, if you listen to certain people. Since Mace's a normal visitor, we'll actually go ladies first here. Overall feeling on the pay-per-view, and should one of the world title matches closed out the show instead of Cena and Wade Barrett?
Overall impressions of the pay-per-view, the wrestling I thought was actually really strong. I was impressed on that score. In terms of it being particularly interesting, I mean, a lot of the results are really predictable. I think there is maybe one or two matches that actually surprised me in terms of the results. So, you know, kind of an A for athletic stuff that I saw, a C or a B for actually interesting storyline work. in terms of what should have closed the show, yeah, especially since I don't think that Cena versus Barrett was as strong as either of the title matches. Not just looking at the importance of the world title and that should close out the show, but in terms of the matches that were stronger, absolutely, I think that Cena Barrett should have gone on earlier in the evening on that score, and one of the title matches should have closed out the show.
When we sit in a production chat and talk on Skype when we're watching the pay-per-view in our individual homes, Mason, one of the things you noted, and I don't know if you mentioned it at WTR because I was powdered out big time by 11 o'clock, was once you got, I think you said it was probably around the third or fourth match that you kind of were getting bored and that it was just too much gimmick stuff. Did you feel that way by the time you got through to the main event, or did that fade away?
No, it was pretty much there throughout the entire show. I think I hit the John Morrison-Sheamus match, which, you know, give all credit to the guys. They put on a great performance. But by that time, that was like the second ladder match that I'd seen in less than, I think, half an hour or something like that. And the whole gimmicks was just boring by the end of it. It was, the more you put out there, the more I'm just going to go, yeah, I'm going to go and look at something else now.
Well, it almost feels like, you know, TNA has their traditional lockdown pay-per-view. I remember sitting in the audience in 2005 during the opening match that unfortunately Chris Candido broke his leg in, turned on one of the people sitting at me and is going, so we're going to sit through eight of these, huh? And they're like, yeah. And I said, so what, by match four, we're all going to be running for the hills? And turn out it works in a certain format. And as you noted, it was the second of the ladder matches. And what Ziggler and Kofi and Jack Swagger did was way different than what they did in the number one contender bout. And then, of course, you had Eddie Guerrero Memorial table match is what a lot of us were thinking when The Miz actually was put through the table. He put Alex – follow with me, kids, because this gets fun. Randy Orton puts Alex Riley through the table. The ref doesn't see it. The Miz fakes out everybody. He does the skull-crushing finale on Orton. Puts Randy into the table. Wakes up the ref. Dude, I won. Look, he's in the table. Cool, all right. Ring the bell. All right, The Miz is happy. Michael Cole's jumping up and down on the table. I don't know if he actually was. All of a sudden, Mike Kyoto looks at the Titantron and goes, hey, look what you did, dumbass. We just caught you. Let's restart the match. So, once again, we restart, and once again, a rye, I think he calls them. I don't know why. You know, I think Alex Rodriguez could possibly have a lawsuit, stealing a nickname there, but hey. The Miz retains the championship, and as we now know, will face John Morrison at a later date. They haven't announced if it's at the Royal Rumble yet or not, but one of the more interesting finishes in recent WWE history, Sarah. It's totally an Eddie Guerrero move. And for a heel like The Miz, it worked.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that, that it worked in that case. I think especially when, you know, you might go in and predict that The Miz is going to come out with the belt, and they sort of tease that Randy Orton might. It gives you an opportunity. They tried to make it less predictable, and I think that it was a really fun and really interesting way to play with the ending there. And I mean, as Mace was saying, as much as there was great athleticism going on in the show, there were a lot of gimmick matches. That's sort of the definition of this pay-per-view. And this is a way to make this particular match stand out from the others a little bit and be a little bit different. So it worked for me, definitely.
Well, and to Mace real quick, the inclusion of Alex Riley in this situation, obviously being busted for alcohol isn't as big a deal as it used to be because he's still involved in this main event storyline. Does this bother you at all? They're pushing this kid as much as they are?
Well, he's always been a background role. He hasn't really wrestled since leaving NXT, so there's not really anything there for him. So leave him in the background. That's fine. You know, if it means that he doesn't get the paycheck for wrestling, then so be it. But one thing I did notice about that particular match, did anyone else besides myself actually notice where the referee was standing during the second finish? the fact that he was standing on the stairs looking directly at The Miz and A-Rai as it happened and didn't call for a second restart, yet he looks up on a monitor and sees a replay and that gets a restart. That sort of seems like stupidity via storyline booking.
Welcome to the WWE as we know it, I guess.
Yeah.
Which leads to the question, are we either, we'll go to the Canadian in the room since we now have once again a Canadian world champion. Are we fine with Edge being the world champion again, or were you picking anyone else, possibly Del Rio as a dark horse to win it, or Kane to keep it at least through to maybe WrestleMania to have Undertaker win it again at Mania?
I was definitely predicting Edge, so again, you know, the predictability is a factor. And, I mean, I guess looking at Edge where he won his first world title, three or four years ago, and he's been a 10-time world champion since then, it is a little bit much, the amount that he's been winning and losing the title. At the same time, Kane's title reign has done absolutely nothing for me. So seeing that end, and seeing a talented wrestler like Edge in that spot again, I can't say I'm complaining too badly on that score.
Okay, I wasn't unfortunately on Wrestle Talk Radio when the predictions were made, so I can't remember. Who did you take, Mace, and are you fine with Edge as the champ, and how long do you see him as champ?
If I remember correctly, I think everybody on the show actually took Edge to win this one, because it actually seemed like the only logical choice. As it was just said, you know, Kane's title run has done nothing, and then you've got to look at the fact that you got Del Rio, who's too new to the company to put a title on, then you got Rey Mysterio, who's injured every second day of the week, and Edge is like the only healthy and entertaining guy of the bunch. So it's only logical you put the belt on him.
And as far as how long, do you see him just going again to Mania, possibly main event Mania?
Personally, I'd say Mania. But, again, it's the WWE, and they have stupid booking decisions all the time.
Yeah, this is the same company. Whoop, there he is. The Spud guy has joined us here.
I've been here for a few minutes. I think it's unfortunate that Kane's title reign ended the way it did and that they did nothing with it. How many of us have been waiting for, you know, 10, 11 years for that man to get a title reign like he had, and he finally gets one, and they don't do anything with him? That's unfortunate. I would have rather seen Kane win that match, but I can deal with Edge.
Okay, but if he keeps it, Spug, how long does he keep it? Does he go at least to Mania, or does he lose it at the Chamber in February? If you're creative, how do you fix this title reign? Is, I guess, what a lot of people ask us when I see people at live events. So we get emails at radio@onlineworldofwrestling.com. That's one of the big questions you always get is, WWE seems to have boggled, as you said, nobody, it's like putting the belt on Abyss in TNA when he had it. You know, how do you put the belt on the monster, now how do you get the belt off the monster? Who's going to slay the dragon? Here, what was wrong with this title defense from word go? What would you have fixed to help Kane become the big red monster that he once was?
Honestly, I think you have to go back to... You know, not just the title defense, you have to go back further than that, and you have to give him a reason to put the mask back on and give him a reason to not talk anymore. Think about it. Kane was a scarier gimmick when he was the big red monster, when he wasn't talking, when he had Paul Bearer or somebody else talk for him. And honestly, if I'm WWE creative, I think of a way to put Kane back in the mask, and I bring in Father James Mitchell. I don't rehash Paul Bearer. I don't rehash the same old screw job from Royal Rumble 99 again. You know, I bring in somebody new, and James Mitchell, you know, it would be a perfect manager for Kane.
That's if you can get him away from the karaoke equipment.
This is true, but that's what you do. That's how you do it. You know, you have to turn Kane back into the big red monster, again. And honestly, if he were to have kept the title at Tables, Ladders, and Chairs, I don't think he'd have kept it past Royal Rumble, because they're honestly looking to unify them at Mania. So,
yeah, I would agree with that. I think that he was much more effective as the Big Red Monster, and if there is any way that we could hit a reset button and send him back, that I would definitely second that. And I think a good way to go, just sort of adding on the Spud Guy's idea there of incorporating James Mitchell. I mean, if Kane were to even, you know, turn on Paul Bearer in order to do that, you know, the idea of him turning on his father, who is the one guy he's really been loyal to throughout this, even that, you know, could send a bit of a message. I think Kane, as he has been the last 5 or 6 years, isn't the most effective character. The script has been lost and changed and has been made so inconsistent along the way that I think a big reset, a restart on that character is definitely needed.
Well, this is the same character, guys, that had the Katie Vick storyline and had a baby with Amy Dumas and then had it ruined by Snitsky. And he almost feels like he's a character on one of your daytime soap operas that you know he's the bad guy. So what do I do with this bad guy? Okay, I did this with the bad guy. Now what do? I threw him off a cliff. He's alive. I put him in a bomb factory and the bombs blew everywhere, but he's still alive. And is this a situation where maybe TNA would go, you know, if this was the old territorial system, to harp on that for a second, because we'll talk with Dutch Mantel later on about it, well, you know, weather permitting, would this have been a situation where Kane's character is just so watered down that him stepping away for a few months and getting rebooted, like Spug said, would be good? Or is it maybe time for Glenn Jacobs' Kane to just drop Kane completely, become something else?
I think it would be fun, honestly, to see him, you know, go to TNA or something like that. I mean, even working with Abyss, although at the end of the day, if you have that conflict there, where if you have the two big monsters clash, who do you have win at the end of the day? But, I mean, I think there's definitely still potential in that character, especially if they go back to the character as it was when he first entered the WWE. I don't think you're going to be able to get that within the WWE so much. So, in that sense, you know, I would like to see them be able to do that, if they can do it realistically, have him go back to where he started. I don't know, without changing federation, if they'd be able to do that at this point within the same company.
It's an interesting point. It's just something to think of, because as a lot of people say, you know, in TV time with certain characters, they've been around. Look at what Undertaker does. He's a classic example. He shows up. Oh, great, now I'm hurt. I'm going to take some time off on TV, and I'm back by Rumble to get me to Mania. And okay, after Mania, I'll disappear again, and maybe I'll come back at SummerSlam. I'm confused, Spug and Mace, since both of you are trained wrestlers and have delved in storylines in your companies. Is it just something creative? Is this like, can't live without Kane on SmackDown? Or do they just really like the guy and want him to keep working?
Probably more of a fact that they rely on him way too much. So the amount of times they've had to go to Kane to either be a placeholder or to be a centerpiece for a storyline to help get somebody over, you know, it's stupid rostering decisions, if you could see it that way. They don't have enough guys to fill the spots that they need on SmackDown, because everybody who's worth watching or worth giving a crap about is over on Raw.
But we were worried about that, guys, when they did this move to Sci-Fi. They were saying, oh, well, when we move to Sci-Fi, we're going to we're going to change and certain guys are going to go over. Is this a situation where maybe Kane needed someone else other than the Undertaker's bug? I mean, we outlined here before, they've had a feud going since 1997. I mean, they're not like a Dusty Rhodes Ric Flair who could just pick up right where they left off, or Steamboat Flair who had feuded in the 70s and then in 89, 90 used the same stuff because it's a different generation.
I disagree. I think every antagonist, protagonist needs to have, you know, their main villain. You know, Hogan had Iron Sheik for the longest time, and Andre the Giant, it went on from era to era. John Cena's had Randy Orton and Sheamus, but mainly Randy Orton. And Kane and Undertaker have each other. And I think with Kane, to go back a few seconds, maybe a reboot is needed. He needs to go away from television for a while. And I also think that Kane has been a workhorse. You know, Kane comes on every couple of weeks to a radio program here in Cleveland called Rover's Morning Glory. Because he's friends with Rover. They met in a WWE show a few years back, and he's just kind of come on every couple of weeks. And they asked him the last time he was on, they were talking to him, and they said, "Do you have any desire?" This is before his title run. "Do you have any desire to be champ?" And he had said, "I'm going to have one more run in the company soon. The kids are grown. They're out of the house. You know, I told my wife that I would do what was necessary until they were gone, and then I wanted one more run, and then I was going to be done. So I wouldn't be surprised if sooner rather than later we see Kane go away permanently. But I would really like to see the Kane character that we all knew and loved when he was the Big Red Monster, before he retires.
To wrap up the pay-per-view segment, we had one news of note from the event. Because of its location being it's in Houston, Texas, there was a backstage visitor, actually two, and that would be former TNA, WCW, and WWE star, and former guest of our program, Booker T and Charmel. Many are saying don't read anything into it because, as noted, the show was in Houston. Booker and Charmel lived there. But wouldn't it be neat to have him? And he teased last year that he was going to be a part of Royal Rumble. Would anybody be against the idea of Booker as a surprise Royal Rumble entrant this year?
Only if we get to see the spinner Rooney.
Oh, he's got to do it.
Yeah, you got to get a Rumble Rooney. And, no, I really wouldn't be opposed to him being a surprised entrant. I also have a little bit of a prediction after watching Raw last night.
Oh, we'll get into Raw in a few minutes, but go ahead.
But I think that one of your surprise entrants at the Royal Rumble is going to be the King of Kings.
Ah, that's right. Mm-hmm. But will he come back with the man stash, or will he be clean shaven is something to note.
No. He's going to have the Lemmy stash, dude.
There you go.
What about Jerry Lawler? Do we see him jumping in this year? Because it's been a few years since he's been in it.
Possibly. I can see it.
Why not? Let Lawler get in there for a few. To note, Royal Rumble, January 30th, Boston Garden, TD Bank North. That building's changed names so many times. Before we go to our first break, we'll just get, on a scale of 1 to 10 from everybody, to Mace, to Spug, and Sarah, 1 to 10 overall rating on this pay-per-view.
Overall rating for the pay-per-view, I'd probably give it a 5. It was average at best. You know, great performances by the guys, too many gimmicks.
All right, Spug, rate it for me, please.
I can't.
didn't watch all of it, did you?
I didn't see any of it. I was with the family, so.
Okay, we'll allow that one. It wasn't like you were down at your local adult establishment.
No, I wasn't frequent. I haven't been to one of those in a while, unfortunately.
Oh, right. Wow. Makes for a boring CB radio when you stop by. We know how Ari felt about it, because as you said, Terry fell asleep, but your overall score on a 1 to 10 basis, what would we give the TLC pay-per-view?
Now, to be fair, we actually caught the replay at 11:30, so when Ari fell asleep, it was actually well past midnight.
Ooh, okay.
But no, I would probably be a little bit more generous than Mace. I'd probably put it at a 6 or 7. Again, I can definitely see where the gimmicks were distracting, and the fact that I predicted every match correctly, you know, kind of tells me they weren't being that creative, if I could see it coming. But at the same time, there were some really good matches, and I've got to give them credit for that, since WWE sometimes doesn't focus on actually putting good wrestling out there. So they did take a step up in that regard.
I'm going to go along and with everyone here and give it a – I'll go in the middle. I'll give it a 6.5 because, as noted, some of these matches did get a little monotonous. Yes, I used a vocabulary word, maybe a couple extra points on the Scrabble board there. Morrison, Sheamus definitely was one of the better storytelling matches, with Morrison's knee being injured throughout, Edge getting the championship, very nice. Still not a big fan of Marky Mark closing out a pay-per-view. But though, as everybody likes to say, he's John Cena. He must close the pay-per-view. And I'm like, okay, so what if he dies? Is his funeral going to close it out too? I don't know. We want to thank Sarah Dygan for stopping by. In This Very Ring is still active. Give the web address one more time for everybody.
Yeah, not a problem. It's in this very ring, .blogspot.com. Like Alan said, life sometimes gets in the way. It hasn't been as regular the last couple of months, but we're still active and going as much as we can be. So come and check us out for sure.
Alrighty, go tag out with Ari so you can do mommy duty. Coming up after the break, we will get involved with Monday Night Raw. No reason to talk about SmackDown because, hey, they are leading to the pay-per-view and they're live tonight. And thanks for listening to us instead of listening to them drown on. We'll also get into some news and notes, including about former WWE star Taryn Terrell and former WWE star Shawn Michaels on an NXS night. The man Dutch Mantel will, fingers crossing, be here around 10:30. We will quadruple check in with him in Nashville. So we'll be back after this first time out on All in World of Wrestling Radio.
Certain passion. Maybe you're a geek, a wrestling fan, a sex enthusiast, or you just need something to do for the evening. Then come check out the Wild Talk Radio Network, providing you with the latest in online entertainment. Whether it's getting in the ring with Wrestle Talk Radio, or getting a little R-rated with CB Radio or Anything Goes, or whether you just want to play a game of Dungeons & Dragons with the geeks over to Talk We Talk Live. All you gotta do is head on over to www.wildtalkradio.com and check out all of our daily programming. Wild Talk Radio Network. Come and get wild with us.
show.
Ladies and gentlemen, with the advent of geek culture becoming mainstream, we here at the Wild Talk Radio Network are doing our best to capitalize on this phenomenon. In that vein, I, Mace, a co-host of Otaku Talk Live, have decided to move a small section of what we would talk about on OTL to its very own podcast. That podcast being Bashing the Books. Now, what you will hear on there is myself going through select readings of this week's comic books, and I just let you know what's going on. So, every Thursday, maybe Friday, maybe Saturday, you'll be able to hear me talk about comic books. Okay, maybe boring, maybe not, who knows? The only way you're going to find out is to go over to the archive section of WildTalkRadio.com and download the show and have a listen for yourself. That's Bashing the Books, somewhere near the end of the week, right here on WildTalkRadio.com.
The definitive professional wrestling-based website on the internet today brings you everything from everywhere. The WWE, TNA, Ring of Honor, the Indie Scene, all this and more can be found on one site. If you're obsessed with everything wrestling, head on over to www.onlineworldofwrestling.com. News, views, and information from the world of professional wrestling is right at your fingertips, only a month's click away, with every single page chock full of information and news on your favorite wrestling stars, such as
Chris Jericho,
Derek Bischoff,
Sid Vicious,
Mick Foley,
plus the most definitive source for all the best audio and video the internet has to offer. As well, news articles and blogs from some of the best-known internet wrestling stars today, and the most in-depth and detailed profiles and galleries of the biggest and brightest stars of today.
Rob Van Dam.
Mr. Kennedy!
Christian Cage.
Barry.
Anna Christel.
Christy Hemme.
Jay Lethal.
Yesterday.
Brett the Hitman Hart.
The Sergeant Slaughter.
Ted DiBiase, the $1 million man.
Paul Pogan, the quickest of all time.
Jimmy Van the Boogie Wiggleman.
And tomorrow.
Peter Wilson. Natty Neidhart.
Harry Smith. Jack Evans.
Get into the world of wrestling online. It's the site of the pro juice. Online World of Wrestling. www.onlineworldofwrestling.com. Check it out today.
Welcome back to Online World of Wrestling Radio, brought to you by the Wild Talk Radio Network. Thanks to Sarah Dagan for stopping by to help us break down TLC's pay-per-view. Maybe it would have been more interesting if we did have a three-hour pay-per-view of stick figures. That probably would have been more entertaining in certain aspects. Last night... Interesting way to begin your Monday Night Raw with The Miz and the ghosts as Christmas past, present, and future. Haha. Having Alex Riley as your ghost of Christmas past, Michael Cole as the ghost of Christmas present, and that growling looking child from the night The Miz won in Money in the Bank as your ghost of Christmas future. John Morrison came out obviously to break it up, and we ended up with a 6-man main event of Morrison, Jerry Lawler, Randy Orton taking on The Miz, Alex Riley, and Sheamus. To either gentleman here, do either one of us like the, do we like this kind of an opening with a vignette, or would you rather WWE just focus on the wrestling, as we'll talk about in a couple minutes, because there were some really good matches on this show?
I was not a fan of this opening. I found it really hard to get through, and hell, I was watching a downloaded version that I grabbed to watch this morning before I came on the show. I'm not a big fan of this type of stuff. I'd rather they focus on the matches, build your stories through your matches, you know, but then again, I've been watching a lot of old school WCW lately, so maybe I'm just expecting too much from these guys this time around. Mind you, that being said, I'm waiting for Ms. Girl to pop up on another show on Monday nights.
Ooh.
Ms. Girl. You know, I didn't see the opening, although I will say that I'm not necessarily opposed to opening vignettes. I think that they should be short, concise, and to the point, however. If you're going to have them, then you need to make them, you know, get a point across that you want to get across, and then move on with the wrestling. It seems that both companies, not just TNA or WWE, both companies nowadays do too much of the talking and not enough wrestling.
And as mentioned, there was some actual wrestling on the show. I actually made a comment to Rockin' as he was doing Christmas decorations and whatnot when the second match of the evening turned out to be Daniel Bryan taking on William Regal. I nearly spit the water that I was drinking out going, holy crap, we're going to get to see Daniel Bryan and Bryan Danielson and William Regal. And then Rock immediately types in, they're going to go 3 minutes, and that's with the introduction. I'm like, oh, don't jinx it like that, brother. Before we get into all of the here's the other matches. Melina is your new number one contender, and then proceeded to bitch slap Natty Neidhart. She took out Eve Torres and Alicia Fox. As mentioned, Daniel Bryan with the Bella Twins defeated William Regal. Santino Marella and Tamina in a new interesting tag team defeated Maryse and Teddy DiBiase Jr. We had John Cena versus the Intercontinental Champion Dolph Ziggler, and with one of the more comical promos in recent history, which we'll get into in a minute. John Morrison, Jerry Lawler, Randy Orton took out The Miz, Alex Riley, and Sheamus. The Raw General Manager set up for TV tonight, Miz versus Randy Orton, so hopefully you're enjoying that. Also set up by Vicky Guerrero, which is supposed to be on somewhere during tonight's program. Dolph Ziggler and Vicky Guerrero taking on John Cena. We weren't big fans of that opening segment, but Were either of you fans of the John Cena laugh fest and the audience? Basically, I understand that this crowd and fans in general do not like Vicky Guerrero, but to have that promo go as long as it did, I mean, the WWE gorilla and the people in the truck had to be sitting there going, for God's sakes, John, just cut it off already. To Mace, since you just watched and it's fresh in your head, what one of the more interesting John Cena promos that we've had in a while?
With the exception of the back and forth fat jokes done between Lawler and Cena, I really didn't like the promo. I actually agreed with Michael Cole and found it childish. And I don't know whether it's me having a higher opinion of this than I do, or I'm expecting more from these guys than this lowbrow, childish humor, you know, that it slaps every longtime wrestling fan in the face. But, I don't know. I just really didn't like it. It was going on for way too long. And Cena's reactions with the whole getting the crowd to boo every time Vicky opened her mouth ruined that for me. I liked the fact that every time she opened her mouth, the crowd was booing so loud that you couldn't hear her. But seeing her in the background laughing like a four-year-old just made it seem stupid. I'd rather see something better from these guys, but then again, I'm probably expecting too much. I probably need a new hobby.
Well, you also got to remember who's on this creative staff. Some of this creative writing staff is from Nickelodeon and other programming.
You know what? Hold on. Because if it was anybody else doing that, a la a Rock or Stone Cold Steve Austin, remember when people would try to open their mouth every time and Stone Cold would get the crowd to say what? Everybody what? Loved it. But now that John Cena does it, people, oh, it's childish, it's lowbrow, it's yada, yada, yada. Dude, either Either pick one side or the other.
But before you just go on and put your foot even further into your mouth, Spug, I hated when Austin did that. I found it stupid then. I find it stupid now. I've always thought that way. Whether it is Austin, whether it's The Rock, whether it's anybody who can actually talk on a microphone, when you do that type of stuff, it becomes childish. I know you're trying to play to the children these days, but have some respect for the long-time fan that's supported your product for 20-odd bloody years, you know?
Before you go and turn this into a bitch fest and you and I start going off one-on-one with each other...
Hey, now.
Perhaps you should stop being so defensive, because I wasn't directing it at you. I was speaking in general, sir. So before you put your foot in your mouth, take the time to listen to what I'm saying before getting defensive about it.
No, but the funny part, let me jump in here for a second, because as I said to Rock when we were talking, I was like, it was funny the first few times that she tried to talk and the crowd cut her off. But I kind of got to side with Mace a little bit in the fact that it just seemed like enough already. You know, after the fifth time, Cena should have cut in at least maybe the third or fourth time and moved the promo along, because you are bogging a show down, and where I have the ability to go, hey, this is boring, let's go see what's going on Monday Night Football or, you know, the Singing Bee or one of the other shows, WWE may have lost some of their audience there. I know they definitely didn't lose them during Daniel Bryan versus William Regal. I don't know about anyone else here, but I would watch that match over and over and over and love to see them on a pay-per-view get 10 minutes, 15 minutes to tell a great story. Because that entire locker room needs to see a match like that. And I know maybe many of the fans may be sitting there going, but that's not wrestling. Hell yeah, that's wrestling. That was phenomenal stuff out of those two guys. And showed that despite Regal's age, you put him in there with a technician and they're going to tear the house down.
The matches, like the Ziggler Cena match was really good. And yes, Cena should have cut that promo off being a ring veteran that he is and knowing what needs to be done. He should have cut that promo off when it started to get out of hand. But the one thing that I like about Cena recently is he's not trying to be kiddie Superman anymore. You know, he knows that certain segments of the crowd doesn't like him. He knows that people in that crowd could care less about him, and so he's giving them what they want, you know? I heard, I wasn't really closely paying attention to what he said during part of his promo, because I was doing laundry and folding laundry, but I did hear him, you know, the crowd started booing him, and he said, all right, and he said something that was funny. Because my wife started laughing. And so, you know, I'm glad he's starting to do that.
Yeah, I believe at some point he did say, oh, I hugged it out with the I Hate Cena guy or something like that.
Yeah, I think I like that that either he's doing it on his own or that they're allowing him to do that. Because in the end, they're turning him into a bigger star.
Well, I could have done without the deep in the heart of Texas bit though. That was sort of going.
Exactly.
That's taking your hometown pop and overdoing it. Seriously,
that's the old Mick Foley cheap pop that he would say to the city of the town, matter where he went, what he did.
Yeah, it's like when the companies come down here, they'll always be. One of the faces will try and do the Aussie, Aussie, Aussie chant with us. You would be surprised. When they do that with us, there'll be small sections that'll go along with it. The rest of us just boo the crap out of it because we hate that stereotypical crap. And when I see it done on TV, yeah, it gets over major. Because, hey, we're on TV. Let's get a voice out there. But it's just taking the hometown stuff just one step too far. You know, but hey, it seemed to be the night of taking things too far when it came to John Cena.
Yeah, we definitely found out for fans that are wondering, well, what's CM Punk's current health status? I think we kind of got a hint as what's going on when he defeated Cena, defeated Ziggler, and then Punk came in with a chair and pretty much laid out Cena. Of course, Cena no-sold it and got up and did his "I'm angry now, you made me mad" thing. I mean, does anybody want to see CM Punk versus John Cena? We already know Punk's been elevated from having matches. I mean, we've had Punk with Taker, we've had Punk as world champ. You know, Jeff Hardy claims that he helped create Punk in WWE, which is very comical when you think of it, but hey. So you're serious, Mish? Or are you just being facetious and going, yeah, I want Punk Cena?
No, I actually want to see this match. With the way that Punk's been going with commentary lately and the lines he's been getting away with, put him face-to-face with Cena with a mic in each guy's hand, that's going to be gold.
I mean, well, technically speaking, though, I mean, obviously he's coming back from a hip injury. As two trained performers in the ring, can either one of you attest to, can that be an injury that's worked around? Can you work around a hip injury, or is Cena the perfect guy because he is a specific, you know, the five knuckle shuffle's coming, you know, he will do the STFU or the AA. You know, he's almost harking back to The Rock and Austin and Hogan, that once you got towards the end of the match, you knew this, and this were coming. Can a CM Punk be protected by a John Cena as opposed to putting him in again with the injury-prone Rey Mysterio or someone else, I guess is what I'm trying to ask.
Listen, if Robo Hogan can come back a couple of pay-per-views ago and get into the ring, I think a young CM Punk coming off a hip injury will be just fine.
Plus, as Spug said before, Cena is now considered a veteran. With the amount of times he's worked in the ring with as many guys as he's worked with, and he's probably worked with many guys with injuries, he should know how to work around that now. Which means we will actually get a half-decent looking match between the two that won't actually aggravate Punk's injury. But then again, if the injury does get aggravated, I could put up with Punk being back on commentary.
Yeah, he was very entertaining. Are we putting Cena? Are we putting Miz Morrison as the Raw half of the Royal Rumble main event, or do we just see that being phased out on TV? Can this go to the end of January with these two, or do they end up having the number one contender sometime on Raw?
No, that'll go to January.
So this can generate enough heat for four or five more weeks. They got to go to just Rumble being the end of the month, and
they'll have a match on Raw. They'll have a match at some point on Raw, but that'll be the get it to the Royal Rumble. You know they'll be able to make it that far. What? Get out of there!
Plus, you got to remember these guys have a history of being a tag team for quite a while that they can draw on to build the heat, to build the suspense leading into the match. So they can easily carry this through to a Royal Rumble.
So we'll possibly see Alex Riley versus Morrison, and then maybe some tags and some pose downs or talk offs or something along those lines, I guess. We noted, this past weekend was the tribute to the troops, and hopefully you enjoyed that. And if you did, WWE is going to be showing it again tomorrow night on the USA Network in the United States and Canada. I think they get it in Canada. I'm not sure if USA Network even exists outside the USA. And everybody was sitting, I got people going to me just yesterday and today, dude, you said Shawn Michaels is on. Where was Shawn Michaels? Well, I believe he's going to be on the 2-hour event. And through his YouTube account, he announced a long-term non-commitment deal with WWE on his YouTube account and told fans that if he ever appears in a wrestling ring again in a non-wrestling role, it will be WWE. Quote, I'm happy to announce that Shawn Michaels and WWE have reached a long-term agreement that will continue and assure our relationship with one another well into the future. He's explained that WWE has always been and continues to support him, and if or when they need him to help out, all they need to do is pick up a phone He repeated over again, he is not coming back to in-ring competition, and wants to honor his word to the fans and The Undertaker that he and WWE in no way, shape, or form have discussed anything related to in-ring performances. And if you had Shawn Michaels listed on your board as he's the Raw GM, he's not the Raw GM. He says he is not, and his job will be to help WWE move forward into the future. So we wish Shawn Michaels the best. Little drama came out from a former diva and Playboy centerfold, and now it'd be Mrs. Drew McIntyre, Taryn Terrell. She has a Twitter account, and I'll talk about mine later after the boss has put the screws to me, but hey, we're talking about this challenge. We'll get there, don't worry. I'm not happy about it. I'm being a company man. She answered questions on her Twitter account over the weekend, and sparked some controversy with one of her answers to a question related to possibly returning to the company. No, if I have to sleep with people in power to keep or continue progressing in my job, I'd rather be poor. This, of course, generated more questions from her followers, as if this was a direct hit to Michelle McCool Calloway, that's The Undertaker's wife and one half of Lay Cool. Ms. Terrell said the comment was not directed at McCool, and wrote that McCool gained her status and talent and success on her own, adding that she's a talent and creative and has respect for her. Apparently, Ms. Terrell deleted all the messages that she tweeted. I'm still learning the hip language to this one that related to the question because it was taken the wrong way. Quote, it was certainly not talking about anyone or any incident, just that I've worked so many jobs in which the casting couches existed, and I refuse to ever take part in that. So it is not a generalized statement of companies which I work for, which none of you know what companies they were, and it's not out to WWE, so I apologize if it was taken out of context and reads differently than what I meant. Somebody swallowed a legal thesaurus there, Mason. I read this as, yeah, this is a shot at Michelle McCool Calloway. And she obviously drew or someone kind of nudged her and said, you just nudged Taker's wife, dude. Not a good idea.
I think the nudging was there, but I don't think it was because, hey, you just insulted Taker's wife. It's, remember, one of us is still under contract with the company. I don't want to lose my job.
What is your view on that, Spug? Do you think this was fast-ass backtracking because Drew McIntyre got involved, or is this her own brain putting two and two together going, you know, they may want me to come back at some point. What a great way to insult my former bosses.
It's always funny when bimbos think they can be smart about insulting people.
Yeah, and I don't know.
Listen, she didn't say one thing that any of us weren't thinking. She didn't say anything
that any of us haven't said on other programs.
Right. So she really didn't say anything that nobody else hasn't already said or hasn't thought, which is fine. The issue that I have is that if you're going to step up and say something like that, have the cojones to own it. And I'm not just talking about her. But athletes in general today all have this. They'll say something, and it'll be somewhat insulting or demeaning to another individual. And then the next thing you know, there's the obligatory, oh, I didn't mean it that way. They're a great person, yada, yada, yada. And it's like, you know, you said it, own it. You know, the words came off of your fingers or out of your mouth. Own it.
And I will be owning it because after a discussion with the big kahunas here at Wild Talk Radio and Online World of Wrestling Radio, yeah, I caved in. I have a Twitter. It's twitter.com/mynameiswojcik. MYIMISWOJCIK. The only thing you'll ever see on there is most likely talk about this show, maybe a little bit of other stuff. I gotta agree with Kenny King. I don't see the allure of it. You won't see me talking about, oh, my dog has three fleas. That is all.
I know you were saying something about what you were watching on television the other night.
Well, that's because my wife coaxed me into another program. I think it's called Get Glue, and it automatically links stuff to Twitter. And I'm like, oh, God, another one of these social networking things. Enough of that. And speaking of social network, congrats to that movie for getting a lot of nominations. And before we go to break, I just want to say, if you haven't seen it yet, you must see Tron Legacy. And if you see it, you have to see it in IMAX 3D. It was so damn awesome. 2 hours and 20-some-odd minutes that just blows your mind. And hopefully you don't get too bogged down in the philosophical stuff that seems to be going on. I don't know if either gentleman has gotten a chance to check it out. Have you, either one of you, been to Tron Legacy yet, or will you avoid it?
I'm waiting until after New Year's. However, I have acquired other means to view it. But, yes.
Could care less.
Whoa.
Could care All right. less.
All right. Coming up after the break, we will get into some TNA wrestling news and notes as they head to Genesis 2010. Dutch Mantel is scheduled to join us around 10:30, so stay with us if you're here to talk to Dirty Dutch about his two books, which we'll talk about his guest booker appearance on Kayfabe Commentaries. We'll be back after this commercial break on World of Wrestling Radio.
On Sunday, January 30th, 2011, the entire wrestling industry will converge to Boston, Massachusetts, for the 2011 WRAs. It's the biggest public award show for the wrestling industry, and it only happens once a year. The voting booth is now open. Go to WrestlingRadioAwards.com to vote up to once per day for all of the coveted titles, such as Wrestler of the Year, Interview of the Year, Best Pro Wrestling Talk Show, Match of the Year, Hottest National Wrestling Babe, and many more categories. If you are in the wrestling industry and would like to participate in this year's festivities, either live or via Skype, for priority accommodations, please contact showdownnews@aol.com. We will see you on January 30th. For more information, please visit WrestlingRadioAwards.com.
Hey everyone, this is Sir Rocket, the host of CB Radio, which you can catch every Saturday night.
Whoa, wait, Rock?
Yes, Cindy?
Did you just call yourself the host of CB Radio?
I kinda did just call me the host of CB Radio.
Honey, everyone knows that you are just the producer.
Hey, I'm not just the producer, I am the host of this.
Oh my god, shut up! Everyone knows that I am the host of CB Radio, which you can check out Saturday nights, midnight-ish, right here on the Wild Hawk Radio Network. Now, Rock.
Yes, darling.
This is where you tell everyone, I'll see you Saturday.
I'll see you Saturday.
Good boy.
If you're looking for a place to hang out with fellow pro wrestling fans, then look no farther than the official forum of OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com, OWW Genesis. It's the gold standard in wrestling forums. OWW Genesis is the home of over 50, that's right, 50 unique forums that range from current day wrestling news and results in WWE, TNA, ROH, Pro Wrestling Guerrilla, tons of indie promotions, as well. There are forums for you to discuss everything from pro wrestling past, including WCCW, WCW, ECW, and the golden age of pro wrestling. You want more? Wow, then check out OWW Undisputed. It's the official debate league. Or even check out OWW Takedown, which is the official e-fed of OWW Genesis. You still want more? Damn, you're a picky person. OWW Genesis is also the official forum for Chick Fight and Online World of Wrestling Radio. You want more? God, you are a super cool wrestling fan. Then just head over to the gold standard of wrestling forum, OWW Genesis, right now at onlineworldofwrestling.com.
The evolution of online sports entertainment begins again on Sunday nights when you step into the ring with Wrestle Talk Radio. Covering all the latest in the WWE, TNA, and the indie scene. Plus, providing you with the most comprehensive coverage of every WWE and TNA pay-per-view. Join Wrestle Talk Radio every Sunday night, live only on the Wild Talk Radio Network.
Welcome back to our second hour of Online World of Wrestling Radio, brought to you by the folks at the Wild Talk Radio Network, Click Wrestle, and OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com. I'm Alan Wojcik, joined by Mace and Spud. They are a part of Wrestle Talk Radio on this very network on Sundays. They're also a part of OTL, Otaku Talk Live. They also have different podcasts. One is Bashing the Books, and then both gentlemen are involved in From Tapouts to Knockouts. During the 10:30 portion of this hour, we will be joined by Dirty Dutch Mantel, who will talk about his two books, his time in Puerto Rico, his recent appearance on Guest Booker, where he relaunched TNA in January of 2010. Speaking of TNA, the show this past Thursday did a 1.12 rating for the 2 hours, with an average of 1.56 million viewers. Reaction actually suffered because of the half-hour break that they put in there, where they took the Elvis Duran Z100 New York morning show and put their version of Crank Callers on there. Reaction did a 0.34 with 343,000 viewers staying around. And we did exactly, we'll let Spug have some alone time because we've outlined before he's not a big fan of the company. So Mace and I will, volleyball back and forth for a while here. Before we go over every single match on the show, my main issue immediately with this program, Mace, was it opened with Matt Morgan and Mr. Anderson backstage and they have a conversation, and then Matt Morgan comes to the ring and he brings Anderson out. And they have the same damn conversation in the ring. I mean, why? Is that just creative going, well, the live audience didn't see the backstage thing, so we got to do it for the live audience? Why not just have the backstage thing and the live audience see something different and not air it? It just seemed a really weird way to start your show out.
Yeah, it did seem really weird. I didn't really notice it until you mentioned it, really. Yeah, if they're going to do the same thing twice in a 5-minute span, then obviously they need to look at what they're doing and go, okay, this doesn't need to be here, this doesn't need to be here, let's switch that around. You know, that's what production meetings are for, guys.
And they do have them, as noted on Dutch's DVD. Well, actually, that's one of my questions to ask him later on, is talk about being in one of those meetings. Our wish has been granted. Jay Lethal is once again the World X Division champion, taking out Robbie E, with a little help from Christy Hemme. The other matches on the show saw Eric Young, the new champion. I'm not sure what he's champion of, but okay. And Orlando Jordan defeating Generation Me, where somehow the match turned into a Royal Rumble, thinking in Eric Young's brain, I'm the champion. Yes, he was walking around with the old TNA World Heavyweight Championship. And what a great way for TNA to help promote Hooters on their network. But if you're a fan of Hooters in the United States, and you go to one of their restaurants and ask them for TNA, can I watch TNA wrestling at your establishment? They'll probably look at you like you just walked into a Chinese restaurant and said, I want a McDonald's hamburger. The other matches on this show, the Knockout Tag Title Tournament moved forward. We're guessing Tara's injury is not as bad as it's made out to be because she did work taking Madison Rayne on as her partner, defeating Mickey James and Miss Pessmacher. Tara used the brace to knock out Mickey James. We didn't have the Pope D'Angelo De Niro involved with some pimping or hoeing or I don't know. He claimed he was getting toys. Yeah, that's one of those seconds you're just going, where's the nachos? I want some right now. We did have a reappearance, a couple reappearances here, but we'll talk of those in a second. Brother Ray, I guess is being nicknamed Bully Ray by himself, took out the Amazing Red. Rob Van Dam took out Rob Terry. In the Double J, Double MMA Challenge, he made Jay Rios, who's a Florida wrestler, tap out. And the world champion, Jeff Hardy and Frankie Kazarian, defeated Matt Morgan and Mr. Anderson, thanks to assistance from Rob Terry. We did, as mentioned, we've had wanted posters out for Desmond Wolf. Apparently, Magnus showed up interviewing during Douglas Williams on camera, saying, hey, we're back. Chelsea's apparently gone, and Desmond is, quote-unquote, got this football thing out of his system. And as mentioned, the other reappearance was the freak Rob Terry possibly being involved with Immortal, maybe not, trying to figure that one out. But overall, we've had this discussion on the whole Robbie E situation, and doing some research found out, I thought he had worked other people on TNA house shows, Mace, but he never touched another wrestler in that company then Jay Lethal. I know you're not a big fan of the character, but where do you go from here with this Robbie E character? Is he got legs, or was this it for Robbie E? You know, thanks for coming, and now you get to go be Rob Echoes or be whatever other name you want to be.
Let's go with the second option. Go do something else. Get rid of the crappy gimmicks, and we're going to let you be yourself, be a wrestler for once in your life instead of fist-pumping dude. And please, Becky Bayless, drop the cookie gimmick.
Yeah, because the hair and everything is just... I think it's on VH1 regular, they had reruns of that show, and I don't even remember how I ended up on it, but it was an episode where apparently the legal situation's going on now in New Jersey where one of them punched out a guy with one punch, and I'm looking at this Nicole Snooki person, I'm going, okay, Becky Bayless, Rebecca Treston, you're a way better looking girl than that little troll. You know, Becky Bayless?
Did you feel like you dropped IQ points when you saw that?
Oh, God, I'm sitting there. First off, I'm going, okay, none of these kids are from Jersey anyway, so let's not insult the state of New Jersey. They're dumb-butt New Yorkers like me. I'm just not as stereotypical as these kids are. I'd like to see Echoes get some legs here, Robbie E. get some legs, and try to do something different. Some inside folks I talked to over the weekend said, yeah, we agree. We would rather have seen him actually wrestle somebody other than Jay Lethal. And that's not an offense to Jay Lethal as a person, but I just don't understand where TNA is going with this. Obviously, I'm not meant to understand it, Mace. But this is obviously another situation where creative, Vince Russo, whoever, dropped the ball and said, okay, great, now, oh, shoot, I got nothing to do with this guy after I put him here. So hopefully Robbie E gets some legs and moves along there. The reemergence of Magnus and Desmond, whether they're going to be London brawling or not, we hope is a good thing for this company because, yes, you had really good matches with Douglas Williams, AJ Styles, but I kind of like the hinting of an idea of a group, either it be the British Invasion situation all over again with Douglas Williams and Magnus and Desmond. to be. I just hope is they don't say, okay, well, you're now the British arm of Immortal. Congratulations, guys.
Yeah, that would be a real pain, a real waste of talent, because then all of a sudden Immortal's gone into NWO territory from 98, where there were so many members that you really didn't have any time for any of them. If anything, try turning these guys face and put them together as a group to start building like a faction or something that's going to oppose Immortal. Because if it's one thing that people have been saying for months on end since this Immortal group got together, is where's the opposing group? I know we have Morgan and Anderson getting together to face off against these guys, but you need more than two guys. You need at least an equal size force to try and fight against Immortal and create the tension that's going to draw people in like it did in the 90s. Because, hell, if they're going to rip off the angle completely, at least do the bits that were successful.
Oh, absolutely. And that is a major thing. You know, we're it's Morgan, and it's Douglas Williams, and it's Eric Bischoff's kid as a referee is what you've got. Because, as you mentioned, Pope's off doing his own thing. Joe's doing his own thing with Jarrett. There hasn't been a Matt Morgan rally cry of, you know, we need to take out Immortal, we need to take him out now type thing. Could this be, like, we had hinted at the idea of Tommy Dreamer versus them to face off at some point. Would this be something for Tommy Dreamer to be doing at some point to try to rally the troops, or did that whole storyline just go to the side again?
No, that one is officially dead and buried. You know, cover up the grave, put in the tombstone, it's over. They need to find guys who have been with the company for a long time that have helped build the company up. Because that was the big thing back in the original version of this in the 90s, was the main guy driving the WCW force was guys like DDP and Sting, who have been with the company for many years and built it up. TNA, on the other hand, unfortunately, they need someone like AJ Styles to break away from Immortal and build a group. They need somebody who's been there for a long time, who's got the history behind them of being a pure, you know, I support TNA 100% guy, and he should be the one that should be leading the charge.
Yeah, and you have that, but the problem is, they're all in Immortal. James Storm has been there since day one, like AJ Styles. Robert Roode dates back to the Nashville days of being in Team Canada back in the day. Same with Showtime Eric Young. But that's about it. Maybe Amazing Red, because he was in and out for a while there. Kazarian, but also involved in Immortal. Kazarian goes back, for fans who don't remember, it was a part of the original Ultimate X match with TNA original Chris Sabin and Matt Bentley, and also the baby bear Alex Shelley, if you really want to bother Alex, walk up to him and say, I loved you in the baby bear gimmick. Is that what's missing? Is that the main, is that step one in fixing this product? Because we'll possibly ask Dutch Mantel that when he comes on, because when you watch the Guest Booker DVD, that's the situation that is presented. I mean, we did a year in review type situation with this product a few months back when we talked about the injection of Hogan Bischoff here. But if you're creative, if Russo's hit in the head with a sledgehammer and he doesn't remember anything, and you go, by the way, Vince, we were going to do this. Is this step one in the chart? Step one, set up babyface faction to take on Immortal. Step two, careful not to ruin step one.
Well, yes, definitely. Step one is create babyface faction to take on Immortal. Step two, find one singular player that you can say is pure TNA. And this would require, in my opinion, Samoa Joe or Christopher Daniels. Bring Daniels back as a guy who has been with TNA for a very long time. Make them your figurehead. Make them your Sting character. They're the guy who is going to go after Hogan or Flair or whoever you want to say this week is in charge of Immortal. And that's your target. Then you start trying to destroy the opposition faction. You'd have the good guys start to drop off, you have the bad guys start to break themselves apart, maybe even might as well continue the whole 90s thing, have part of Immortal break off and become Fortune once again. You know, there's ways to build this that's going to bring the crowd back in, because today's crowd probably don't remember the NWO sort of glory days. As much as, like, old hats like the two of us and Spug and everybody else can sort of pull these references, you got to remember, today's main wrestling fans is younger. You know, you ask kids that are, you know, 15 through 18, which is a part of their key demographic, whether they tell you or not. If you ask them about the NWO, they have no idea what you're talking about. And this type of thing is fresh to them. So if you're going to rehash it properly. Use the things that succeeded back then, not the stuff that's going to drive viewers away, a.k.a. Jeff Hardy being there 24/7.
All right. And as you mentioned, Samoa Joe being a possible piece of the puzzle, thanks to Dixie Carter, we now know that Samoa Joe has signed a new deal. This came from Ms. Carter's Twitter. I'm not a follower. I think, is that what it's called? Following? Yes. I'm still not hip
you
to the
follow,
lingo.
You follow people. They might as well call it stalking.
Okay. She says in her Twitter, proud to report the re-signing of Samoa Joe. I feel good knowing that I have a focused and determined Samoan on my side. Congrats to us both. For fans that aren't aware of it, Joe has been working without a contract since Final Resolution 2010, but still showed up, and yeah, he's been there. He's been there since 2005, and this is, as we mentioned with Kane, he's another person that's been reinvented and overinvented and underinvented so many times. Just let him be the damn Samoan submission machine, for God's sakes. We'll transition away real second. You brought up Christopher Daniels, and due to my internet issues, that was the only match I was able to see on Final Battle 2010, thanks to GoFiLive.tv for all your fun problems you gave fans. Here's what happened during the show. The All-Mat Express took out Kyle O'Reilly, Adam Cole. Our least favorite guest, Cole Cabana, defeated T.J. Perkins. In the ladies' match, Sarah Del Rey and Serena Deeb defeated Amazing Kong and Daisy Hayes. Eddie Edwards defeated Sanjay Dutt by a pinfall. In the ROH Legends match, the notorious 187 Homicide took out World Television Champion, very weird to say that about ROH, Fallen Angel Christopher Daniels. All three Briscoes, Mark, Jay, and Dad Mike, took out the Kings of Wrestling and Shane Hagedorn. Roderick Strong defeated Davey Richards in what I did get to see online yesterday via submission to retain the world championship. And Kevin Steen is done with ROH. He lost the Battle Without Honor to El Generico, who would have lost his mask. During the intermission, which was 30 minutes long, thank you ROH, was announced that the world's greatest tag team, obviously not going to be called that when they work for them, Haas and Benjamin, will be joining Ring of Honor full-time in 2011, and their goal is to capture the ROH tag team titles. Is this a drop ball by TNA not bringing these two in and letting ROH get them, Mace?
Yes and no. Yes, it means that they're missing out on a couple of really great...
And I said, for a few minutes, and I'm like, okay, I figured there was going to be a promo of some kind, and all of a sudden I come back, and they're just, it's a standard shot of the ring, and I hear a noise, I'm hearing music, I'm going, okay, do they have technical difficulties, and the match is going on, and then let me go check on Abby, and come back, and it's still frickin' there, dude. I mean, this is probably the problem with this iPay-per-view situation, at least when you do it edited, from what we've been told, with Pro Wrestling Fusion having it, WSU had it, there's rumors that the Jeff Peterson Memorial Cup from a few weeks ago will go that route too, but this is a big problem that you got to avoid with this iPay-per-view stuff. Get the bugs out before you get there, Mace. I mean, technically speaking, the 30-minute intermission on a live event, a live house show, I'll buy it. But where you've got paying customers watching from home, 30-minute intermission?
Yeah, that would be a stupid thing to do on even any live show, really. I didn't catch the ROH event, so I'm completely unaware of what went on that night.
It's okay. That's it. From a technical standpoint,
pretty stupid to have a half-hour break. It completely kills your crowd, especially when you've got to keep going, because you've got to realize you're broadcasting to a worldwide audience, supposedly. So you got to fill that time that you've been given.
And it was interesting. It was my first time hearing former WWE talent Kevin Kelly as a pay-per-view announcer. He did the broadcast with Dave Prazak, who, thanks to that quitting thing. Which hermaphrodite? You mean Kevin Kelly or Prazak?
Kevin Kelly.
Oh, I didn't know he was one.
No, oh my God, back in the day, that was The Rock's thing, is he would always call Kevin Kelly a hermaphrodite. I'm gonna say him.
I understand. It was a little weird because you have Hodgegood, I believe, is the ROH HDNet announcer, and wasn't on the pay per view. But the other funny part was him actually dropping tweets, I guess they're called. He was dropping them on the pay per view. I'm like, sir, you're just sitting there doing the broadcast, Kevin Kelly, with your Barry out and where your LG ally or something sitting there going, hey, Smobunk Mofunk said something cool on Twitter. I will steal it and use it on this live thing. Is that we're going to see WWE or TNA doing at some point? Taz sitting there going, yeah, I'm messing around on my BlackBerry here, and, you know, Chicken Manga Manga 12 said this about the show. Ha, ha, ha. I mean, is that what we're getting to the point with an iPay-per-view? I mean, I know you want to be interactive with your fans, but there's a point of, you know, being interactive and getting a little over the top, isn't there, guys?
Quite possibly. Like, what's next? Guys are going to put up tweets while they're actually wrestling in the middle of the match? Oh my God, I just did this. Did you guys see it? Tweet me back.
I just took a chair shot. Ow, that hurt.
I don't know. Terrell Owens twittered on the sidelines this year, so did Chad Johnson.
Yeah, so for fans that aren't aware of it, if you didn't know it, Terrell Owens is sitting somewhere hurt going, damn, my knee. We also want to send best wishes to Brett Favre, if you can find his sense of smell or any others after that concussion shot he took during the game last night. We'd like you to send it to Minnesota. And as someone who lives in Florida now as a native New Yorker, I'm sitting there watching that game going, it's 19 with the wind chill, it's 6. And these dumb offensive linemen are walking around in short sleeves. Are you nuts? I mean, what's next? WWE get a hold of WrestleMania and go, all right, we're going to do it in Minnesota. It's 20 degrees out, boys. Go get them.
I wish they'd play bowl games in cold weather.
Well, I know we're getting the Super Bowl in a couple of years in cold weather. It's going to be at the new Meadowlands Stadium. I don't know if they're going to put a roof on the joint or what, but it could be coming.
No, it's going to be outdoors.
Yeah, so definitely find your Snuggie available online now. Because if you don't, you're going to freeze your tush off there. I to hark back to this iPay-per-view for a minute here, apparently a lot of folks had issues that they didn't even get to see the opening match with Red Titus, Kenny King, and Kyle O'Reilly, Adam Cole. So I don't know if you need to go to GoFiLive.tv fans and lodge a complaint with them or not. Laugh a lot, watch them take a break, tweet. That'd be interesting. No, I'm on a count out. We need a 20 count in this match now so I can go over and do my tweeting thing. Yay me. I'm in a submission move and I'm tweeting.
Just to do a quick story time segment. Once when I was doing commentary during a sort of our version of house show down here, I had a bowl of M&Ms on the desk in front of me. We had guys taking breaks in the middle of the matches, like literally stopping mid-move and going, wait a minute, and jumping out of the ring and grabbing the M&Ms. So pretty much same type of situation. But you never know. These guys might even just try and tweet back and forth via their phones or something while sitting in the ring. I give you an arm drag. Ow, that hurt.
Take the chop. Bam.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're not killing time, but I just find this whole twitting thing funny. I'm still learning it, and I'm trying to learn that, okay, the number thing means something else, and the at thing is something else, and I'm just, like, so if I send it to somebody, it's a retweet. Okay.
No, retweet something different.
Okay, explain. We've got a couple minutes here left before we get to Dutch Man.
Retweet is something entirely different.
If
you tweet something on there and I think it's funny, I can hit retweet and I can put your tweet out there for my account. And it'll retweet.
Yeah, because I got one from Jersey Girl during the New York Giants loss to the Philadelphia Eagles that she hated the Giants. I'm like, they're not my Giants. First off, my mom's a Giant fan. I just happened to cheer for them. And wasn't cheering towards the end of that game. I was sitting there crying, going, somebody tackle him, man. Jesus. Get the strength coach from the Jets out there to trip him up or something. Stop him from getting in the end zone.
Wait. That's right. You're a dirty Jets fan, right?
I'm a happy dirty Jets fan. I get to play the Chicago Bears next Sunday in freezing Chicago.
Good luck with that.
Yeah, 2 weeks in a row I get the Jets and Giants living here in Florida, thanks to the Buccaneer fans for not showing up, so that way you can have your games blacked out. We are not in a blackout situation here. We are going to go to our next timeout, and when we come back, we will be talking to Dutch Mantel. We will take your calls at 267-297-1397. We will take your calls through Skype, being Sir Rockin. We will take chat room questions if you're already in our very interactive Russell Talk Radio chat room. Wild Talk Radio chat room. So I'm going to go blow my nose, and we'll talk to the other side of the break. OWW Radio.
This is Mace, the overworked co-host of Wrestle Talk Radio, OWW Radio, Otaku Talk Live, the offside producer, Cindy's cleaning boy, building janitor, advertising guru, Spug's bong holder, drink runner, Omega's transformer record keeper, and bashing the books, all here on wildtalkradio.com. If you decide to listen to a show that features a bit of the old-fashioned ultra-violence, people getting their heads kicked in, bones broken, and bloody crazy fights, then come on over and listen to Tap Outs to Knockouts live in the archive section of wildtalkradio.com.
Mace, it's not all about the bloody stuff and the ultra-violence. Hey, this is Spud from Tap Outs to Knockouts. And if you want to hear the news, results, the technical side of MMA, then check us out on wildtalkradio.com in the archive section. And oh yeah, we do have the bloody stuff.
And now I know.
And knowing is half the battle.
Hey! What are you guys doing in here? Get back to sweeping.
The definitive professional wrestling-based website on the internet today brings you everything from everywhere. The WWE, TNA, Ring of Honor, the Indie Scene. All this and more can be found on one site. If you're obsessed with everything wrestling, head on over to www.onlineworldwrestling.com. News, views, and information from the world of professional wrestling is right at your fingertips, only a month's click away, with every
single page chock full of information and news on your favorite wrestling stars, such as
Chris Jericho,
Derek Bischoff,
Sid Vicious,
Mick Foley.
Plus, the most definitive source for all the best audio and video the internet has to offer. As well, news articles and blogs from some of the best-known internet wrestling talent today. And the most in-depth and detailed profiles and galleries of the biggest and brightest stars of today.
Rob Van Dam.
Mr. Kennedy!
Christian Cage.
Jerry.
Janice Michelle.
Christy Hemme.
Jay Lethal.
Yesterday.
Bret the Hitman Hart.
The Sergeant Slaughter.
Ted DiBiase, the Million Dollar Man.
Paul Hogan, the greatest of all time.
Jimmy Vance, the Boogie Wiggleman.
And some more.
Peter Wilson, Natty Neidhart.
Harry Smith. Jack Evans.
Get into the world of wrestling. Online. It's the site of the pro juice. Online World of Wrestling. www.onlineworldofwrestling.com. Check it out today.
Here's a quick message going to all the geeks out there. If you want to listen to three guys talk your language, tune in to Otaku Talk Live, Wednesday nights, 9 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Wild Talk Radio Network. What? You expect me to be funny? We do that on the show. So tune in. Listen. I demand it.
Coming soon to the Wild Talk Radio Network, a show that honors all the men and women who have sacrificed their lives, a show that pays respect, and a show that pays tribute to us. That's right. Join us as we pay tribute to ourselves, as we hand out awards for the best show moment, best phone call, and even best show. We will also be paying tribute to one of our own by handing out the WTR Lifetime Achievement Award. Join us in the coming weeks for the first ever WTR Awards right here only on WildTalkRadio.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Matt Hardy, the creator and owner of TheHardyShow.com. Make sure to check us out. And you are listening to the Wild Talk Radio Network.
Welcome back to Online World of Wrestling Radio, brought to you by the folks at the Wild Talk Radio Network. Definitely check out that award show. Will be fun indeed. This will be fun, because this is this was originally supposed to be Sean Oliver, Kayfabe Commentaries. However, due to real life getting into his way, we had to transition. And we got someone that we've been wanting for about 5 months in this program. So thanks to the wonderful world of Facebook, we do have a man who not only has one book already out on the market, which is called The World According to Dutch, he now has a second book out on the market, which is called Tales from a Dirt Road, and as we'll discuss with Sean Oliver for next week's program, he is a part of the Kayfabe Commentaries family, recently being involved in the Guest Booker series. We welcome Dutch Mantel to our show. Thanks for taking time out of your busy day for us.
Well, like you said, thanks to the technology and the beauty of Facebook, you ran me down, and you were real nice, and you said, hey, would you like to do the show? And to tell the truth, I've been wanting to do your show anyway, because I've heard a lot about it, so I'm glad to be here.
Oh, wonderful, and I'm very happy to hear that. Before we get into everything else now, including the books, I know currently you have a training camp in the suburbs of Nashville. How long had that been in your mind to give back to the community, so to speak, the wrestling community, and teach? I know you're affiliated with NWA Top Rope and Mike Cersei's promotion. Was that something that you had wanted to do for a while?
Well, I'm going to tell you a story about it, because I'm good at storytelling. Because I've been offered, asked so many times, hey, how do you get to be a wrestler? How do you get to business? How do you do this? You know, and will I train people? And I really never had a desire to train people. And one kid come up to me one day, and I was in a convenience store or something, and he brought up that he wanted to recognizing, wanted to know how to get trained and what I trained him. And I wasn't interested in training him. He'd have to find a wrestling school. I said, you go find a wrestling school and take it from there. And he said, well, I did. And I said, you found a wrestling school? He said, yes. I said, what happened? He said, well, what they did, they charged me. I forgot, he gave me some amount of money. They charged him this amount of money and never showed him anything. So, and I've heard that so many times because, you know, guys, they start up wrestling schools, but they don't know enough to teach these guys anything. So I had some guys here in Nashville who wanted to learn, and I said, okay, I'll help. Because in my school, I call it the University of Dutch. It's a serious school, and I think it's one of the better training facilities in the South. And it certainly has, I'm going to turn out some really good students. And, but as far as really wanting to do it, I never wanted to do it. But now that I'm doing it, I'm enjoying it. And another thing, all the years that I wrestled, I never thought about doing a move. I just never thought about it. But when you teach it, you got to back off. You got to dissect the move and walk through it. And actually, it's been a learning experience for me. I had to learn how to teach it. But I'm enjoying doing it. It's in Lebanon. It's called the University of Dutch. If anybody's in the Mid-Ten area, Kentucky area, Northern Alabama, and they want to train, they can get a hold of me, Dirty Dutch Mantel with ULs at gmail.com, and we'll take it from there.
To take us back for a few months here, because you came out with the original book, was The World According to Dutch something that was in the works while you were in TNA Wrestling? Was there ever talk of TNA getting in bed with you to do the book? What was the genesis of the original book?
It was just in my head. I've still got another book up there. I had all these stories that, you know, that I've just told before, but they're various stories, and some of them are funny, and some of them are serious. But unless these stories are written down and documented, and they're great stories, you know, those stories will be lost forever. So in my first book called The World According to Dutch, I wrote it, a 272-page book, in about 5 weeks. I wrote 272 pages because I was in Puerto Rico. When I left TNA, I went to Puerto Rico and laid on the beach through September, October, November, and I didn't start writing that book to the end, maybe the last week in October. This is last year. And by December the 14th, it was finished the first week of December, and it went live on Amazon December the 14th. These stories have been there for years, and stories with The Undertaker, and stories with Kane, and some of those people often. And it's just, it's not so much wrestling, it's surrounding wrestling and all the things that go on. Not necessarily in the ring, but around the whole business. That's what. And as far as having a conscious effort or a conscious wish to write a book, no, I didn't have that desire. It started from me writing a blog called The World According to Dutch News, and I had some people write and say, "Hey, why don't you write a book?" And I said, "I don't want to write a book." And they kept on. I said, "Oh." So finally, a guy came to me that I know pretty well. And he said, "Hey, I can help you with this." Then I got serious about it. I probably got a 272-page book. And it amazed me that I even did it. I didn't think I had it in me. I just started writing one day. You know, like Forrest Gump, he said, I just started walking one day. And pretty soon he was in California. Same way with the book. I started writing, and after 5 weeks, I had a book.
Now, when you were writing that book and going through the stories and stuff to put down in there, what were some of your favorites that you put in?
In the first book?
Yeah.
In the first book? Well, the Stone Cold story, when I gave him his name, I first met him, that was in there. Kane saving me from a bad, bad riot in Puerto Rico one time. I mean, they were kicking the crap out of me, buddy. If it hadn't been for Kane. But he wasn't Kane then. He had another name, Doomsday or something. I was calling him. Kind of. He saved me. That was a good one. And another one was getting stuck with The Undertaker on Interstate 65 South by the state troopers and pulled out at gunpoint. We had about eight cops on us with all guns on us. So they had a report that three big guys were riding down the road. It was me, Undertaker. You remember a guy named Action Jackson?
I do, yeah.
Well, he's a big black guy, about 320 pounds. I mean, we all had long hair and beards, and we looked rough. We looked like biker gang members or something. I don't know what that means. But they pulled us out at gunpoint because somebody had reported that we rode down the road and brandished, not pointing or aiming, but we brandished a gun at some motorists. So somebody called it in, and they pulled us over. And I remember they knew who we were. I said, guys, let me tell you who I am. I'm Dirty Dust Mantel. And they said, shut the F up. I said, okay. I don't guess they were in a mood for small talk. And then they searched the car, and they were looking for a gun. And they didn't find a gun. And then they were looking for a joint, and then they were looking for cocaine. They were looking for drugs. They didn't find anything. The only thing they found was a half-filled bag of Red Man that I was dipping and chewing. So they had to let us go. And then when they found out that we didn't have anything and it was bullshit, you know, guys, we're sorry. Will you sign these autographs? And we signed the autographs and we went on down the road. That's one of the stories. Another story is me and Bill Dundee wrestling in maximum security prison in LaGrange, Kentucky.
What was that like?
Well, let me tell you what. I went in there, and really, it's one of the better chapters in the book. I guess it's some kind of fun that they can bring entertainment in. And something. But when I arrived there, I asked Dundee, I said, what kind of prison is it? Ah, matey, don't worry, you know. It's the petty stuff, like little check, bad checks and stuff. So I was in there, and they put the big gym. They had the ring sitting out there. And when the matches started, they didn't have any guards on the floor with us, no guards at all. So I asked this trustee, I said, what's that guy there for? He said, he's an armed robbery. Okay. What's he? He robbed a bank. Okay. What's he for? Something else. Assault. And I was asking, how much time they got? He's got 10 years. He's got 5 years. See, they know everything about everybody. So I saw a guy there. He was about 6'10", had sunglasses on, long red flowing hair. Kind of looked like the Undertaker was standing around. And you know, in a prison, all the black gangs, the black guys were together. They in one section. The Hispanic guys were in another section. All the white guys or the Aryan Nation guys, they were all together. But he was a big white guy. He stood all by himself, and nobody even talked to him. So I asked the trustee, what's that guy here for? He said, he killed six people. Next people, and he was in there for like 278 years or some ungodly amount of time. But brother, I tell you, I could not wait to get out of that prison that day. I was there 3 hours, and it felt like 3 months.
But it wasn't like wrestling a club fed.
Oh, my God. But you know, in a prison, let me tell you, the baby faces are the heels, and the heels are the baby faces. Because they cheered me, and me and Tony were like bad guys, right? But they cheered us, and the Fantastics, it was Tommy Rogers and Bobby Fulton.
Oh, yeah.
They booed the shit out of them. And I remember I had Tommy Rogers in the ring. Yeah, Tommy Rogers got a nice-looking little butt. So I put a stretch on him and pulled his pants up a little bit so that they could see that exposed cheek. Oh, my God. They said, Dad's going out here. We know what to do with him. And Tommy said, screw this, man, I'm leaving. I said, leave. Go ahead, leave. Walk out there. So he didn't go nowhere. It was a
go
weird
ahead,
experience. And I talk about a fight, I talk about the fights I've been in the wrestling game. Because, you remember when Hulk Hogan did the FedEx thing in Memphis and Lawler was supposed to wrestle him? You remember that?
Yes.
About 4 years ago. Well, I was on that show. Jimmy Hart booked me, so I was riding down there with Jerry Borash. We was riding Memphis. He knew I was on the show, and he said, hey, can I go with you? I said, yeah, go. And we went down and to the FedEx Forum, and I remember Jerry was asking me, I said, hey, have you ever been in a fight? I went, what? I've never been in a fight. How many? But there's a tale of a bad fight. I was in the second when I was first talking out. I ended up putting 14 stitches in the guy's head. I ended up having my helmet rip my eyeball out. Oh, my God, it was bad. But tell you what, I never had any more trouble out of it. But as far as really wanting to write a book, I had all these stories, and I'll put it down on paper and wrote about it.
Before we get into the guest booker DVD, which was very entertaining, I got an email question from a friend who borrowed my copy. Michael Gorey wanted to know, I remember you as Uncle Zedekiah in WWE when you were there with the Blue Brothers or whatever the Harrises were called. Was there ever a situation where you may have moved into creative? Would you have taken a chance to be in WWE's creative at that time?
Well, I would have tried it. But you see, in my new book, Tales from the Dirt Road, I talk about being on creative. See, creative, is, when I broke into the business, they didn't have creative. We didn't know what creative was. You had a booker. A lot of people look back and say, oh, well, you can't have that now. Well, I don't know why not. It worked great then. I don't know why it don't work great now. See, have you ever been on a committee, Dennis? You ever been on one?
I have not been on a committee, no.
I mean, not a wrestling committee, but any kind of a committee. Well, a committee rules by popular vote. If you get on a committee, and you see, I'm from the old school, and I'll take no bones about it, but if I'm on a committee with new school, we're not even speaking the same language. I'm speaking wrestling, and they're speaking something else. And then sometimes they look at me like, oh, well, you're too old. Well, tell you what, I went to YouTube the other day and I was looking at some of those houses we used to draw. And I just put a picture up on Facebook. It was from a little town in Kentucky that had 5,000 people in the town. And we ran there and we get 2,500 people in the house.
Do you think, Mr. Mantell, that from an old school...
You can call me Dutch.
I'm sorry. It's just a respect thing. Right.
We're right. Respectful right. Here.
Hey, you bastard. I might respond better than that.
Do you think that coming from an old school perspective like yours, do you think in today's day and age with the economy like it is and the recession going on and with everybody cutting back, do you think that could be a benefit to wrestling as a whole because they're going to have to go back to the things, the wrestling that gets the people to the arena and not necessarily all the showmanship and glitz and glamour?
Let me tell you something, Adam. To me, they've taken the wrestling out of the game. What is being lost today is the art of the game. In my new book, Tales from a Dirt Road, it's available now on Amazon at Dirty Dutch Mantell with 2 L's at gmail.com. You get an autographed copy in the morning. But I talk about the difference between writers and bookers. Totally different animals. And writers, you know, writers can't book. They just can't book. And bookers might not be able to write, but you've got to have that strong booker for the writing to even have an effect. You can't write it and then do it. You got to do it and then write it. I don't know if that makes sense. But it's almost like taking a writer and putting him on the field on an NFL football team and asking him to coach the team. It can't, guys, I'm telling you. If you look at 20 years ago, it was dying then. But let's go back to before this took over. Early 80s, and even I went to Puerto Rico in the 2000s. We sold out because I made it a contest, I made it a sport, and I made it, you know, some people who, so the fans were pretty crazy. Somebody was pissed off at another guy. I think we've put too much comedy in the wrestling. And so there's different degrees, and I may be old school, but this is how I explain it. Let me say this. Raw, let's take Raw. They call it a TV show, correct or no?
Correct.
Yes? Yep.
How long do most TV shows last?
An hour. Half hour tops.
Length of time.
Law and Order was on TV for 20 years, and they kept going and going.
That's an exception. So was Gunsmoke. But you don't have any of those. Friends was on how long? And that was a mega hit.
Seven years?
Okay.
Friends, Seinfeld, yeah.
So what I'm saying here, those shows, even the super shows, go 5 years, 6 years, that's most. Raw has gone, what, close to 20? How long has Raw been over? Okay,
something like that.
But after a while, those shows, they have a shelf life. They just do. But let's go back to sports. How long was sports go on? Forever. So when they bring wrestling back to a little more of a sports-based performance, then I think it will benefit everybody. I truly believe that. Now, of course, you've got people saying, well, no, Dutch, you're just too old school. Well, you say what you want to say. But I don't think Dutch can get that much better. I really don't. I haven't watched Raw since I don't know when. Sometimes they have good shows, you know. I actually kind of like it. When I do watch Raw, I kind of like it sometimes, but it's kind of deception. But in my case, it's not up to me whether I like it. It's whether the fans like it. See, in my lifetime, I bet I've seen 20,000 matches at least. And, you know, sometimes one match is the same as the next match. But if you want to judge that from being an old super perspective, what makes people sit up and take notice is a heat performance, a scenario. One guy, when they really think one guy doesn't like the other guy, even though it's scripted, you still get a lot of mileage out of that.
We had a question from our chat room. Jerziger wanted to know, in your time in TNA, and this may be a loaded question, what was the most ridiculous thing that was ever pitched in creative, either by Jeff, Vince Russo, Jim Cornette, or even Dixie Carter, that you sat there going, that crap's not going to work, and it still made TV or a pay-per-view?
Well, there was a lot of things. See, we'd go into creative and I'd just see the game last night, bring a cup of coffee, call you all late here, whatever, you know, and then I'd be on the computers and it was just some crazy stuff. I really can't pick one. I remember
let me pick one because
go ahead.
I was in the build. I covered TNA in person in both Nashville and in Florida. I was the annoying person with a laptop in the disabled chair section. And one of the weirdest situations was Sean brought this up on the DVD, and we'll ask Sean about this next week. He brought up on the DVD Dixie giving the whole speech about, you know, after the Sting Abyss match where they lowered the coffin in the middle of the ring and 1,000 people are chanting Fire Russo, and she came back and supposedly yelled about, oh, you know, if I hear another Fire Russo chant in my building, this is kind of going to happen. And your answer on the DVD was bullcrap, basically.
What she did was she found out later that Vince, she somehow got it in her head that Vince didn't book that. She thought I booked it, I guess, because I think that's what Vince told her. So
that's crazy.
My answer to Dixie Carter, that's not Dixie. And you look at my body of work as opposed to Vince Russo's. If you ever find any kind of an opportunity where the fan shouted Fire Dutch, I was definitely blamed. Even on the tape, I said it's bullshit, and I told Vince, and I kind of like Vince. I'm not mad at Vince. But damn, don't saddle me with something like that, buddy. I've been in the business for a while, and I hated that match. And if you want to know one of the most stupidest ideas, that was one of them. I don't know, last rides match. I actually got it in my book. The last rides match was totally, totally embarrassing. Not only from a fan standpoint, it was embarrassing from the creative standpoint. It was a stupid match, stupid concept, and you saw the fans' reaction to it. They pissed all over it. And you know what? I tried to say, guys, I don't think it's going to work. Oh, yeah, it's going to work. I said, okay, do it. Let's do it, guys. Because in creative, listen, When I was in TNA, I was 100% for TNA. And we pitched an idea in creative, and I didn't disagree with it. Well, I voiced my concerns. But at the end of the day, if I was outvoted, well, okay. Let's go and let's make this work, buddy. And I tried everything. But I had nothing to do with that match. What are you going to do with the match? How does it work? I don't know. But sometimes, if you know too much about wrestling, it works to your detriment.
All right. Our boss, one of our bosses is Jason Dedrich, who's involved in Chick Fight, and yep. He actually was not able to be here with us tonight, but he did ask us, he wanted to hear, because he'll listen to back on the podcast later, wanted to know your feelings on the actual creation of the Knockouts Championship, and how much of an influence did you have, and especially with the Knockouts division, are you happy with what they've done since you left the company?
Well, that's not up to me, what they've done with it, but I think this is, I tell the whole story about forming the Knockouts. Nobody wanted the Knockouts. Nobody. Jeff didn't want them because Jeff said they're phony looking. I said, well, I'm not going to disagree with you, Jeff. They are phony looking. And Vince didn't play nothing, and Dixie didn't much like them. Nobody liked them, and I explained this in the whole book, The World According to Dutch. And finally, I think I caught them at a weak moment. We were working for Bound for Glory, I think, in October 27th. I think dates escaped me, so don't hold me to dates because I've been hit on the head a couple hundred thousand times. So I said, hey, we got, and this was like back in June or July, so we've got to get this together. And I handpicked the girls. And Dale Kim had been talking to me, and I think she's one of the greatest girl performers out there, female performers out there. She told me about Kong, and I got a hold of Kong, got him on in there, and we kind of set up the gauntlet match for the first TNA Knockout title. And see, now, Dixie Carter, I'm going to give her credit. She named the Knockouts. That was her name. I said, okay, we'll stay. I like the name. We'll stay with it. But for 18 months from that time on, I'm going to say one thing. The Knockouts were the highest rated part of the TNA show. And why? And I'm going to take full credit for this. Nobody messed with them but me. The Knockouts did tremendous ratings. And they actually still draw more than some of those other guys. Well, I used to put Kong and Gail Kim in the ring. And see, nobody wanted the Knockouts until they saw they could draw a number. Then all of a sudden, no, we like these Knockouts. And you talk about cost effective. You know, when you put Sting and you put Kurt Angle in the ring, you know, they've had a lot of money with those guys. Then you put the Knockouts in there, and they would do a better rating than those guys. So if you look at the difference in money, wow, what a return they got on the Knockouts. That's either here or there now, but I was proud of Kong, I was proud of Gail, I was proud of Jason's wife, Melissa, proud of ODB, Roxy, all those girls. They were all great. Very good.
Who came up with the beautiful people?
I think that was Vince.
Okay, we'll give Vince some good points for that, because that for a while was one of the top angles.
But that was a natural, you know, they were putting there for the looks, and Angelina's very good. Velvet has improved so much, it's almost like it's not the same girl that I first inherited. But they do good. I love the beautiful people. But see, one thing I liked about the girls, and I'm going to say this right now, the girls, I heard when I started this, every one of the guys would come up to me and say, boy, I tell you what, you're going to have a headache now. You're going to have all those girls fighting and bitching and moaning. And guess what I had with those girls? I had absolutely nothing but 100% cooperation from them. Because you know what the girls were trying to prove? They were trying to prove they didn't like just being divas and having pillow fights and mud wrestling matches. They didn't like that. I don't blame them. They wanted to actually prove that they could perform. And I let them go out there and perform. And another thing I did with the Knockouts, I would age it every one of their matches. Either me or Scott DeBoer was there with them the whole way. And the one thing about Kong had 7 years experience at the time, and she was my anchor. She anchored that
knocked that division for 18 months and did a great job. And I used the template on Kong. I called it the Abdul-Gul template. I followed his playbook, and it worked to a T with Kong. I have a sister who, she hates wrestling. She wouldn't be caught dead watching a wrestling show. And the only, so she turned it on sometimes, but she would only watch it when Kong came on. She wouldn't watch anything else. And when Kong came on, she would come in there and watch it, and when Kong went off, she'd walk away.
Huh. Interesting. Because you mentioned that on Guest Booker.
Go ahead.
Yeah, because you mentioned that on in the Guest Booker that, you know, you were talking about the Rockettes. Go follow that point up there. You talked about the Rockettes as a, and using Awesome Kong as a reference point for that with booking.
Well, that goes for the guys too. I talk about the WWE, the next guys, NXT or whatever they're called. See, they all look the same. They're all cookie cutter. They're all 5'10" to 6'2". All got good bodies. All look like they're juniors in college. You know, if you walk into a bar and you're standing there and these guys walk in, well, hell, that's just a bunch of college kids comes in. And this is not a slam on them. Nothing, they work their butts off. But what if you were in that same bar and in walks The Undertaker? And then right behind him walks Kane. And then Abdul the Butcher comes in there. And then Bruiser Brody. And then Stan Hansen. Then a young Ric Flair or a Roddy Piper, right? Then you got a Pac Song or, you know, then One Man Game. You'd say, what the hell is this? See, those guys were big, impressive looking, and you didn't think they looked tough. They looked legitimately tough. So, but the Rockette analogy I use, you see all the Rockettes, but they all look the same. They all kicking to the right and then kicking to the left and kicking to the right. But if you had Awesome Kong on one end of that, who are you going to be watching? You're going to be watching the Rockettes, you're going to be watching that big black woman at the end. And all of a sudden,
is that a creative thing? And
say what now?
Is that creative? Because, I mean, with WWE, we've heard leaks from people that it's Stephanie McMahon and then a bunch of TV writers. Is that just
no knowledge
from the wrestling people creatively to, well, you know, in your era, like you mentioned, you had in Memphis, you had Jerry the King Lawler, you had Bill Dundee, there was you. And then when you moved into the 80s, you had the Fabulous Ones, the Fantastics, Jim Cornette coming in for a while there. Is that just creative, dropping the ball?
Oh, yeah, it was all creative. But we didn't have creative in those days as Booker. But see, everybody looked different. Nobody in Memphis looked the same. Here I come out cowboy with a bull whip and a poncho. Then Lawler come with the crown. And I know it's a long time ago. Here come Dundee looking like a wannabe Elvis. Then the Rock and Roll. And then the Fab. Then the handsome Jimmy Dyer. And then Joe LaDuke. It just went on and on and on and on. But see, nobody was a copy of the next guy. If you look at those next guys coming out there, they all look the same. To me, I can't hardly tell them apart. I mean, I could if I really was 22. But to me, they all look, they're cut from the same mold. And I don't have anybody yet who's disagreed with me. See, that's what made the beauty of wrestling. Because wrestling used to police itself. When a heel would go to Memphis to wrestle Lawler, he would be geared for Lawler. Just like a heel would go to WWE years ago, they would be programmed against Bruno or programmed against Hogan. See, this is before all the big contracts came in. Well, when a heel went to Memphis, you could almost mark on a calendar how long he'd last. It's a rule of thumb. I've actually talked to Jerry Jarrett about this. If he came in January, they would get him ready to march, and they would probably kick him off a little more, you know, a little bit, and work him toward Lawler, and he'd hit the summer run against Lawler. By come October, he was done. 8-9 months, he was out of there. But by being out of there, he did the territory of the company a favor, and it actually did the guy a favor. Because he kept the fans, all of a sudden, now a new face would come in, another face would come in, because he kept constant turnover with the fans. They kept seeing different people. I use this analogy. You go to strip clubs?
I do.
Okay. Let me say this. If you see the same girls for months and months and months on end, don't you get kind of a little tired of them?
Absolutely.
And you're begging that owner, please, man, get some new girls in here. Please, get just give me a new fantasy. Give me something. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay. But say you may have the most beautiful women in the world, but after 3 months you go, God, please, I give me something else. So he brings in a bunch of skanks. Well, hell, you're kind of happy for a bunch. You know, it's a different fantasy. But then all of a sudden you went with the good-looking girls back, and when they come back, but that little absence has made the heart grow a little fonder, and now you're glad to see them again. That's the way the business used to work. Now in WWE, TNA, they signed these guys 2-3 years, and it's, believe me, from a creative standpoint, Cecil B. DeMille couldn't keep some of these guys alive for 3 years. Seriously.
I would agree with the strip club analogy, except for one thing. Everybody's got their favorites. They all have those one or two that
okay,
they want to
say,
see every time that they come in.
I'll say that, but okay. But it's the same way. See, like Memphis always had Lawler. He was going to be there. They had Dundee. He was going to be there. You had your mainstays, but you had to rotate the rest of them. It's the same way. You kept your mainstays in there, but those other girls, they had to rotate through. See, I don't go to a lot of strip clubs. I just use that analogy, but I think it's true. Same way with wrestling. You know, if you see the same people week in, week out, week in, week out, you finally get tired of them. But see, the difference in wrestling years ago, we had to go to a town 52 weeks a year, a live show. If you put WWE in Memphis right now, and say they draw 10,000 people. If they came back next week, you know what they're going to draw? 5,000 people. They come back the next week, you know what they're going to draw? 2,500. They will probably end up with about 1,500 people there. That's what they're going to end up with. Because that's the way it is. In the days when I was there, we would turn out to Memphis about 10,000 people. We worked some wild, crazy shit, and oh my God, and people climbing up the walls and jumping off balconies, and people bleeding all over the place, chasing each other. Next week, go back, 10,000 people. So you had to keep those 10,000 people that were coming, you had to keep them entertained and keep them coming back. Otherwise, you demand no money.
Now
you don't have to do that. You can go to L.A. and draw 15,000 people. Then you go to New York and draw 20,000 people. Then you go to Miami. Then you go to all these big cities. But you're going to draw something. But you, WWE, that's what I'm saying. The art of the game is lost. They can't go back and repeat what they've done. And you see their buy rates now. The buy rates are starting to slip now. Now, I don't know if that's the economy, too many pay-per-views, UFC, but I have never seen, I think the wrestling business right now is in, I'm going to use this word, a malaise. I don't think nobody's really, you know, paying a lot of attention to it, to tell you the truth. I hate to say that, but hey, if the shoe fits, you got to put that thing on and wear it.
Well, the wrestling business may have lost the art of the game. But games change, rules change, and wrestling, in a sense, has sort of adapted with it, and in some points failed to adapt with the change of the game. Do you think that there is something that be it WWE, TNA, ROH, or any of those companies can do to adapt better with the way today's media has changed, the way that the perception of wrestling has changed over the years, the way that the game has changed?
Well, I think there's a lot of things they can do. I do think they need to take the writers and curtail them a little bit. I think they may need to take this business a little more seriously, you know. And I think there's a lot of things they can do. But the question is, what do they do? See, it's in their hands. It's not my hands. I know what I would do. And it may work and it may not. But I don't think it would fail. I don't think it could do any worse than what they're doing now. But sometimes if you're going to change, at least try to change something that may help you, even though you don't even understand it. See, this, when I say the art of the game is being lost, see, the master bookers like Vince McMahon, he knew what he was doing. Even Dusty Rhodes, you know, knew what he was doing. Eddie Graham knew what he was doing. Bill White, Jim Cornette, even Jerry Lawler and Jerry Jarrett, they all understand how to structure an angle, maintain an angle, and pace an angle to get the maximum benefit out of it. See, sometimes I've seen things on TV, they'll start it, and hell, they'll blow it off before the show's over. What is to go see? Where's the intrigue? Where's the, who's mad at who? Nobody's mad at anybody. Hell, I don't know. It confuses me. I've been confused a lot of times. When I was in Puerto Rico, and I know people said, oh, shut up about Puerto Rico. Well, I would, but I went down there. I didn't even speak the language. I was down there 3 years, and I bet I had at least 20 stadium sellouts in those 3 years.
Wow. 20.
Now, listen, the toothpaste was out of the tube then. I mean, those people read English. They know this business is scripted. But I did it in such a way that they overlooked that. They enjoyed it so much. And I've always used this term. If you got athletic guys, let's take AJ Styles, for instance. This is one of my favorite lines in TNA. I said, hey, we got a thoroughbred. Let's let him run. But, you know, I don't think there's nobody in this business, you know, AJ Styles, I think he's tremendous. And he's been frustrated a lot of times because he's not an actor. He's not really a great interview guy. But he is so good in that ring that if you just told just a halfway good story with him and stayed on it, he'd be the most over guy, I think, in the company, really. But he's been there, what, 7-8 years now?
He's been there since day one.
How long?
He's been there since day one. He was on the initial pay-per-view they did in Alabama. He won the X Division title on the second of the two-hour events they did.
Well, he's been there a long time. But I always have a lot of respect for him, and I got a lot of respect for those X Division guys. I really do. But is there anything that they can do to change the business? Yes. And if you watch Vince McMahon, I'm not going to say this. He may be a little too old now to even want to mess with it. But Vince, if you watch Vince, to me, the greatest promoter of all time. I think he even beats P.T. Barnum. Because if you watch Vince McMahon, every 3 to 5 years, he reinvents himself. And I think there's another reinvention in Vince's future. I really do.
You had mentioned the territorial days where you had Waller and Jarrett involved. And then you had, if you went to Dallas, it was Fritz Von Erich. You came down here to Florida, it was the legend of Eddie Graham. You went to each promotion, you had someone, either Bill Watts, Ole Anderson, Gulas a little bit in Nashville. Is that what's missing right now? Because WWE and TNA, they do have a nice set of producers/road agents. The guys that myself, I'm 36 years old, that I grew up watching, like a Steamboat, Arn Anderson, Al Snow, D'Lo Brown. Is that needed where instead of them just being agents, is that something that you should do and say to McMahon, Dixie Carter, Jeff Jarrett, you got these guys sitting back here, actually let them do something other than what they're doing as a road agent and let them get way more involved creatively. Is that something that maybe is missing?
Well, I think it's missing because when you have a creative team, you got to have somebody who's played the game. You have to have somebody who's played the game. You cannot take, listen, if it's a TV show, no, you don't have to have guys. You know, I don't guess you do. But the show, to me, they're not very good. But if you have somebody who knows how to structure and maintain an angle, that's when it gets fun. That's when it gets good. Now, I can sit here and talk till I'm blue in the face. It won't make any difference until either TNA or WWE want to make a change, and they may never make a change. It's their business. It's their company. But if I'm looking at it from a fan's perspective, I'm not really interested in it. So, but you know, when Stone Cold started doing this thing with Vince McMahon, now that, to me, that interested me. They did that so well. And you knew it was scripted, but they did it so well, and it was so entertaining. Because you had Stone Cold as a character. See, that's one thing that's missing also. A lot of these stories could get a hell of a lot better if they had good characters behind them. You see what I mean? Stone Cold had his own personality, and they didn't try to change him because he was what he was. And people enjoyed that because he was real. He was as real as you could get. And by God, look at the run he had. But now, it's, read this off a piece of paper, and you read this, and you got a point, and you got a point. Man, I don't want people to have points. I want somebody to be a real, I want somebody to be a real asshole, and somebody to kind of get shafted. I want to feel sorry for him. I really do.
Well, here's a two-parter to that. One, with going back to what you said about you got to have people who played the game to be in creative to kind of direct them where they should go. With all reports of Triple H getting an office in WWE corporate and sort of taking a backstage role, he's been in the game a long time and learned from some legends in Ric Flair and the like, Shawn Michaels and the like. One, do you think that could help coming in the future because you have a real business-oriented mind in Triple H going into that realm of the business? And two, with the way that they're marketing the wrestlers today is a PG sort of way more kid-friendly version than even in the 80s, do you think that's hamstringing them from having the real characters like Austin and The Rock and people like that, that sort of today's generation of wrestling fan grew up watching?
Well, Triple H, he can only agent and direct who they've signed. If they're not going to sign characters, he's not going to have a lot to work with. He's going to have the same cookie cutter guys saying the same thing, and they all looking the same, and they all stepping all over each other. I do like the fact that he knows what he's doing. I like that, but it's going to. If he has good material to work with, when you've got good material to work with, sometimes, guys, I've been there, it writes itself. See, in Memphis, we used to go out and listen to the crowd, same way with Puerto Rico. And now that's a luxury that WWE and TNA might not have. But I would go out there and I'd listen to the crowd and who they would pop for and who they hated, who they disliked. I'd take all that information and fed exactly right back into my internal computer in my brain, my internal hard drive. So the next Saturday night, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to reward those fans, and I'm going to give them a little more of the guy they liked and a little more of the guy they hated. They told me where to go. I didn't tell them where to go. They told me. I had to, once I found out which way they wanted me to go, then I would take it from there. But instead of trying to force something on them, I let them force it back on me. Because people don't get up and scream and holler and throw things for nothing. They got a reason for it. So you got to take that human emotion and you got to put it back into the wrestling business. And that's what I did. And for 3 years, I sold out in Puerto Rico. I didn't even speak the language. I knew in Puerto Rico, I knew just enough Spanish to get the dog shit kicked out of me. But I didn't have to know it because I listened to them, because human emotion is the same all over the world. And my wrestling down there, I tell you what, it wasn't the greatest in the world, but the stories were so deep and so layered and so defined that a 6-year-old kid could tell you the story. That's how good they were. And I'm not bragging, but because we sold out all those times, because it was just a simple story. Simple. It wasn't deep. It wasn't complicated. It wasn't layered. It was just a simple story, straight through. And that was the main story, and we stayed with it. I stayed with it.
Real quick, we ask this question to everybody that comes on.
Uh-oh.
And some people answered, some people don't.
Oh, God.
Some people just kind
well,
of...
Alan's already tipped you on. I'm not going to answer whatever it is. It's got to be a loaded question. What is it?
Hell, no. You've been in the wrestling business for a very long time and been all over the world, so I'm sure you have tons of stories. Enough for a couple books. What is the greatest rib you have seen pulled? It's either seen pulled, been pulled on you, or pulled on someone.
Well, when I first got in the business, they pulled a rib on me. And this what made it. I've been in the business, I don't know, I'd only been in the business in maybe about, I don't know, a month, 2 months. And we was down in South Georgia. I started in Georgia. And there were two guys that they had been having this argument. And I found out later they weren't really having an argument. They just wanted me to think they were having an argument. So we got in a little town in South Georgia that had those ceramic walls in the dressing room, almost like a shower room type deal. And I came back from my match, and I sat down in a chair, and the guy said, "Hey, man," he got to argue with the other guy. "I'm tired of this shit." The other guy said, "What are you going to do about it?" "I'll tell you what I'm..." So he got it. One guy pulled a gun. He said, "I'm going to blow you away." Somebody lit a firecracker and threw it under my chair. And right when he lowered that gun, that firecracker went off. My God. I almost had a heart attack. And see, I just had got back from Vietnam maybe 6 or 8 months earlier. And it scared the hell out of me. Man, that was one of the greatest ribs. And they thought that was so funny. And they just laughed. But I didn't think it was too funny. So that was probably one of the greatest ribs ever played on me. And I've seen some others. I've seen guys arrested. I saw Bobby Jaggers pulled aside one time in Charlotte. And they said, "Hey, do you know such and such a girl?" "No." "Well, got a charge on you, a rape warrant or something." "Oh, my God." And they put the cuffs on him.
No.
They put the cuffs on him. And he looked at me and said, "Help me." I said, "Brother, I don't know. What the hell's going on here?" "Hell, it was a rib on me. I thought he'd really done it, I guess. I don't know." But they set him up. And then they had a big laugh about that. And they were some more ribs, but, you know, the ribs weren't as prevalent later on as they were in the early days. They say the Dynamite Kid was one of the hardest ribbers in the business. I was never around him. But he pulled some stiff ones, some really stiff ones. So, but that was some of the ribs I remember.
With your time in WWE, you had Owen Hart there, the late Owen Hart, who many people say was probably one of the greatest ribbers of all time. Did you ever witness any Owen Hart ribs?
No, not really.
Ah!
I never, you know, I was around Owen quite a bit, but I never really was. I think he had calmed down or he had slowed down by that time. I wasn't around in maybe 6 to 8 months, but I never was a witness to any of his ribs. But he was one of the kings. He was a strong one.
Is there a possibility of seeing you again anytime soon in the Kayfabe Commentaries collection? Because you were a part of the Ring Roast with Jim Cornette, and then you were part of this guest booker series. Is there anything in the works, possibly?
For what? What was
for
it?
To work with Sean Oliver again. Do you have anything set up that he may have pitched you about?
No, I don't have anything set up. But I'm going to tell you what, Sean Oliver, it was the first time I ever met him. I was very impressed by him. I think I like his concept. I like his, and they treated me well. And I went up there, and, you know, it was first class. And I actually spoke to him the other day, and he sent me some complimentary copies of the guest booker and the roast thing. I think it was good. I enjoyed it, and I hope the fans do too. I think it's selling pretty well. See, actually, on that DVD, I promoted my first book, The World According to Dutch. And I don't know how many he sold, but The World According to Dutch has really kicked ass this month. And that's the only thing I can, it's been out a year, and it's been the best, this has been my best performing month, since maybe last February. And the only thing I've done different was done the Kayfabe Commentary, hosted, I guested on there, and that's where I think it comes from. But I enjoyed it, and the book's done well, and, The Tales from a Dirt Road, my new book, is doing good. So, you know, I've written two books in less than 1 year. And I've written like 600 and something pages and put out two books. And I never intended to even write one, but I ended up writing two.
Yep. And we'll look forward to another one coming soon. DutchMantel.com is the website. Don't forget, fans, there's two L's in Mantel. You can get both books there. The guest booker with Dutch is available through kayfabecommentaries.com. You can also find him on Facebook. You can also find him on Twitter. It's amazing when you started your career that none of this social networking stuff existed. Now it seems like we can't even live without it.
No, we can't because, you know, somebody looked at me and said, "You're on Twitter?" I said, "What the hell, man? Yeah, I'm on Twitter. Why?" "Well, you don't seem like the guy to be on Twitter." I said, "Well, you know, maybe I don't, but it's there. I might as well use it." Facebook, I got 3,500 friends there, and I know about 12 of them, so but the people know me. But the thing I'll do on Facebook when so many people, this is what they do. They say, "Hey, Dutch," and I say, "Hey." It's like they know me. you know, I don't know these people. And then I said, where are you from? And we just start talking. And I think it amazes them because I type fast, too. I can really, you know, I'm a pretty fast typer. And I respond fast. And I enjoy talking to fans. Actually, I enjoy talking to fans more than I enjoy talking to wrestlers. Because years ago, you couldn't talk, they didn't want you talking to fans. Now, hell, I don't want to talk to wrestlers. It's funny how the business changes like that. But the first book is good. I think it's a great read. And, you know, it's on Amazon. And one day I was looking at Amazon, I'm looking at a review. And I think up the last week or something, I had 15 reviews on there. And 14 of them were five-star reviews. I had one four-star review on there, and that's the worst one I had. The biggest complaint I had about my first book was that it ended. And that's where the second book come about. And I said, hey, write another one. And I said, okay, here it is. So, and when I wrote the book, I don't write it in a preachy style, and I don't try to, I don't make any social statements, and I don't have an agenda. I just tell a story. And when I tell a story, this is the way it happened, this is the way I saw it, and I try to make it a little funny, or, because a lot of them were funny. But in the second book, I tell some stories you may be interested in. I tell a story about the Briscoes having a big fight with Ernie Ladd back in the mid-70s. You ever hear that story?
No, I didn't know about that.
You never heard that story?
Uh-uh.
See? That's what I'm saying. If these stories aren't kind of documented, and I just put what I knew in there. I never even talked to Jack and Jerry about it. I talked to Ernie Ladd. Ernie Ladd had this big fight with him one night after the show. And it ended up with Jack and Jerry going to the hospital, bleeding. It was pretty bad. It was pretty serious.
God.
Really? You never heard this story, guys?
No, I never. No. That's a new one to me. And I hear tons of stories.
And I was also there when Eddie Graham, you know, killed himself or shot himself. I was there. And I was booking then. I remember Super Bowl Sunday, 1985. And that's when it happened. That's what, 25 years ago? My God.
Almost, yeah.
25 years ago. And that's a serious chapter in the book. But to me, I loved Eddie Graham. I loved him. You know, because I think he was a wrestler's wrestler and a booker's booker. He was one of the most knowledgeable men in our profession. And I remember Dusty Rhodes was doing an interview, and I read this last week about, you know, King Curtis Ikea died. And Dusty was talking about the King. And he said the time that he wrestled him in Florida. And Dusty made so much sense when he said this. And he said Eddie Graham was the booker then. And he says he wanted to have run a feud between Dusty and Curtis. And in Miami one night, and that crowd in Miami was always hot. It was a hot crowd. And he said, I want to see if the King is ready for you. He said, let's send him to the ring. And he said, I just want him to get in there. We're going to pull you guys apart. I don't want you guys to even touch. And I want to see what the people do. That's the way we used to do in wrestling. We would test an angle before we did it. Because remember what I said earlier, guys? The people would tell you if it was ready or not. And if it wasn't ready, then don't do it. If it's ready, run with it. And he says they were ready. The people were just red hot to see that, and they sold out six times in a row with King Curtis, IK, and Dusty Rhodes. But they tested it first. They did a little test run on it, and it was positive. Let's do it. That's where we used to do it, guys.
That's amazing.
Hey, I put a video up on the Facebook the other day. It was me and Cactus Jack against the Rock and Roll Express. When you watch the match, it is so fluid, and really, it almost looked effortless. Like we didn't even try, but the people were just all over us. And when you see things like that now, you say, what the hell happened to this business? I don't know what happened to it. Well, I do know what happened to it, but I don't have enough time to talk about it.
Oh, we'll save
anyway,
that for another time.
So, Alan, did you read my book? My first one?
I have a copy sitting here in my house, but unfortunately I have this problem. It's called a 2-year-old. It takes up a lot of my time.
All right, well, then you need to read it. I thought you reviewed it. No, you reviewed the guest booker.
I reviewed Guest Booker, yes.
Did you enjoy that?
Yeah, I did. I wish they would have given you a little more time to actually do the booking thing, because that happened when Mike Graham was on. They had Graham come in and rebook, I believe it was when the Crockett's purchased Championship Wrestling from Florida, he did a booking thing there, and he was in the same situation as you, told some wonderful, fabulous stories, but unlike you, you had the booking experience, and Sean Oliver told a story on our show a few months ago where he said, we're recording this with Mike, and he turns to me and he says, I can't do this, dude. I'm sorry. This isn't working for me. Was it just edited that way that Sean just wanted you to get the ball rolling with the reboot of TNA, or was that your decision? What happened with that?
Well, he sprung it on me not too soon after he booked me there. But I kind of hit the keys. I said, you got too many guys. You need to fire half of them and use the other half. You cannot have 70 guys in a company, I don't think, and do justice to them. You just can't do it.
Yeah. Well, Paul Heyman brought that up. He said if anybody under the age of 40 is going to get their head chopped off, do you agree with that with TNA, or is he being a little too harsh on the talent there?
Who, Heyman?
Yeah, Heyman said that.
No, I think he was – well, there were some guys who never turned the needle. They never did. They just never did. They just kept getting signed. And, you know, listen, the whole world is based on productivity. You either produce or you get somebody else. And if guys don't produce, they need to move over, or you need to create some other people. To me, this is what I think one of the main reasons why wrestling is stagnant now is because guys are actually staying with the same company too long. No disrespect to them, because there's nowhere else to go, but how many times can you see the same guy in the same match before you just turn it off? I said one thing, a guy brought up to me today, he called me and he said, you said one good thing on that guest booker that he said really jumped out at me. He said old-time bookers, and I learned this from Bill Watts, old-time bookers, when they were booking angle, they would always turn an angle off before the people turned it on. Because you go too long with it, and they piss all over it.
Well, that kind of goes to, we've talked about it on this show when we talked WWE and we talked TNA. We talked earlier about the character of Kane that Glenn Jacobs has been playing since 1997, where they had him with the mask and the hair and everything. And then Mace and Spug kind of agreed that once you took the mask off of him and you turn him into a talking character, that kind of ruined the character. Some people feel the same way about Abyss in TNA, that once you had Abyss start talking, the big monster aspect is gone. If you were in the creative chair, and I'm sorry to put you on the spot like this, but just from your legend of experience, if you were put in the chair with this character of Kane, who has been around so long, is there a point that you hit the reset button on Kane? Because Spug had mentioned possibly get him back in the mask, don't have him talk, and Spug even mentioned the idea of Father James Mitchell or some other person coming in and turning him back into this demonic character. Can that be done to save this character? Because we like Kane as a performer, but can him or someone like Abyss be turned back the clock and bring back the big monster type character?
I actually think you can do it with both of them, because it just takes time. But you have to do it. You have to dedicate yourself to it and go do it. Now, will it work? I don't know. See, that's what you can do it, but will it work? See, it's not up to me. It's not up to me. It's up to the fans.
Right.
Now,
because the fans this year had.
I invented Abyss in Puerto Rico.
Right.
In my new book, Tales from the Dirt Road, I tell the story where I found him and where I brought him in and put the mask on him and called him Abyss and made him a monster and all this kind of stuff. And I kept him down there 1 year, and then I let him go because, listen, he needed to get out of there because he was going nowhere in Puerto Rico, and he needed, if he was gonna do anything in the wrestling business, he needed to get out and get his name known. So I sent him to TNA. But even in TNA, I fought against him talking, because I thought that would kill the character. And I fought so hard against him even being that Stevie Ray pulling his hair out neurotic character they had him doing.
Right.
See, that's not me. That's not me. And to me, I think He's not a monster anymore if he's worried. What's he worried about? He's 350 pounds. What's he worried about?
Right. Did you cringe when they did the Hulk Hogan Hall of Fame, now you're a superpower with the ring thing? I mean, I'm a fan of Abyss the character. I liked him when him and Jeff Hardy had their Full Metal Mayhems, and he was the Monster's Ball, and then him and Sabu had the Barbed Wire Massacre match. That's the Abyss I like. The cute, cuddly Abyss with the Hulk Hogan ring just doesn't work creatively, Dutch.
Well, hey, you don't hear me arguing with it. But like I said, hey, man, I was on creative for 6 years, and I enjoyed my time there. And I didn't agree with everything. But, hey, it's not the end of the world. It's just – and I don't dislike Vince Russo. Not at all.
Yep. We're going to go ahead and let you go.
My wife is waving a gun at me. So.
Yeah. I usually get that in my house about this time when I'm told to wrap up the show. We would absolutely – I will message you through Facebook, and we will definitely set something up again in the near future, especially when you get to book three, because we'd like to bring you back because we hope the fans enjoyed these stories.
Well – My book three is going to be called Conversations with Idiots.
Whoa! You heard it here first on our show. That's an awesome title. I hope you're being serious, because that's an awesome title.
We're chapter
Conversations.
Number
one. Yeah. I used to tell people, I said, I'm going to write a book called Idiots I Have Known, and you're going to be in the first chapter. So, but hey, guys, let me say this. I enjoyed being on your show, and, if anybody wants to read my first book or my second book, they can go to Amazon.com or they can go to my website, www.DutchMantel.com, or you can email me at DirtyDutchMantel@gmail.com, and I'll get back to you.
Excellent. You heard it there, DutchMantel.com. Thank you so much for taking time with us. We really appreciate it.
Take care, guys. Y'all have a good
night. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
That's 2 weeks in a row. That's a great bookend. Yeah, Jim Cornette last week, fans. Dutch Mantel this week. Next week, we do have the creative mind of Kayfabe Commentary, Sean Oliver, coming around. He will wrap up the entire 2010 year for you. He will also delve into what is on board for 2011, including the U shoot with Iron Sheik.
Oh, that'll be interesting.
Oh, I hope that it comes with subtitles. That's one of my first questions I'm asking Sean tomorrow, because anytime he ever starts talking, you just go like, Sheik, I can't, Sheik, slow down, Sheik, I can't hear you.
Number one, Hogan, asshole! What? Dude.
Yeah, pretty much.
Is that even a complete sentence?
I don't know. It almost reminds me of Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf, the basketball player who has Tourette's, and you're doing an interview, and you're like, what, dude? I can't hear you. Also next week, you need to get ready here, Spug, because the campus legend...
Oh, I know. I got your text message. I got it.
And yeah, he's ready.
There's going to be some trash talking going on, because he's a South Carolina fan, isn't he?
I can't remember where he's from. I know he was an App State person.
Well, he's an Appy State. Well, yeah, he's from North Carolina. He's an Appy State guy, which is fine. And he did Ohio State a favor a couple of years ago by beating Michigan. I tried to give him props on that, and he was not having anything about that. Like, I was talking down to Appy State. No, I love Appy State.
Yeah, well, we pitched the idea. I pitched the idea at Peterson Cup. He is on board. The campus legend Brad Allen will come back, talk some wrestling with us. He will talk some BCS football with us next week. So that'll wrap up next year.
Speaking of the Peterson Cup, did you talk to Callahan?
Yes, I did. And he was totally fine with everything that went down. And he had, like I said, I believe FullImpactPro.com is going to announce soon whether that's going to go to iPay-per-view or that's going to go to DVD. And he is hopefully going to be back on this show soon. He, unfortunately, is in a situation like Dutch. He trains some kids. I'm not sure if he trains the Combat Zone school up north, but he's involved in training, so trying to get him on a Tuesday may be difficult. We want to thank everybody for staying with us tonight. Me sounding like I've got a... I do. I have a head cold, fans. I apologize. I tried my best to brave it. These two gentlemen are brave.
Are we going to break?
So we're going to wrap it up and go home, kids. We've been here for almost 3 hours. And
oh, because I had something I wanted to bring up for a debate that he talked about in the interview that we didn't really expound upon.
Oh, okay, please, go ahead. You got a few minutes.
When he was talking about, when I asked him about, you know, Hunter and you know, could that help change things in WWE? And he said, you know, the fans will decide. You know, the fans will let you know. And I went, you know, that's something that we don't talk about very often. And I wanted to bring that up because that seems to me is that that's something that's really wrong with both companies is that they don't. They don't listen to their fans at all.
Well, that also could fall into this isn't. I think maybe what he's saying works in a territorial situation. I don't know if it would work on a national level, Mace. I know, you know. Like I said, I'm an '80s kid. I was born in '74, so I grew up in the '80s, where I do remember bits and pieces. And thanks to YouTube, a DVD, and trade taping, and ESPN having AWA and World Class on. You got to go back to think to the 80s mentality for a second where Dutch was started out as a booker. He says on guest booker, it wasn't, you know, like all of a sudden he turned around and said, I want to be on creative. He was asked by Jarrett and Lawler and Dundee and the Memphis folks to chip in. And he is right. Certain aspects, it does work. I don't know, Mace or Spug, to put it back to either one of you, could that concept work? Because, I mean, the crowd in New York will crap on certain things. But the crowd in L.A. may love it. The crowd in Des Moines, Iowa may be middle of the road. So I put it back to you, gentlemen. Can that idea work of Stephanie McMahon standing in the middle of Raw or SmackDown going, half the crowd likes it, half the crowd doesn't. What to do?
Well, I like his when he said that, you know, we tested an angle before we ever did it. And I think there's a lot of what he said is going on with, you know, they start an angle at the beginning of a show, and by the time the show's over, it's done. There's no explanation for it. There was no, you know, why did that go on? I would like to see it go back to the days of, you know, if Randy Orton and we'll use Miz and Randy Orton, for example. If Randy Orton had a problem with the Miz, you see him come out and they get nose to nose and they're spitting and arguing at each other, but not one of them throws a punch. And you judge the crowd's reaction, and if the crowd's not having it, go a different direction.
Well, that goes back to something that I remember. I think it was Jake Roberts' Pick Your Poison DVD. He mentioned, somebody always asked him, like, well, how come you were never with Hogan? And he tells a story on that DVD, and if you can find a copy of it, get it, embrace it. It's awesome. I have an autographed copy. Yay, me. He said they filmed a snake pit with him and Hogan where he did something, and Hogan ends up getting beat down. The crowd went nuts for it. They cheered Jake Roberts. They didn't boo that the heavyweight champion Hulk Hogan got beat down. They cheered Jake the Snake Roberts. And WWE immediately pulled them aside afterward and go, that went great. We're not going that way. We don't want that to happen, man.
And I think there's a lot of that going on. I think that they need to go back to, you know, test it. See what, and unfortunately, with today's media, with Facebook and Twitter and the interwebs, you know, they could test an angle at a house show in Tuskegee, Alabama, you know, and everybody will know about the angle, which is unfortunate, you know.
Right.
The element of surprise, I think that above all else, the element of surprise in wrestling is gone.
Yeah, and I can testify to that because Jim Cornette brought it up on one of the guest bookers, and in trading emails, I asked him the question about it because he had said when he grew up, in the Memphis, Nashville, whatever you want to call it, the Jerry Lawler territory. And if you go back to it, you could work, I believe they used to work, and if I'm wrong, I apologize to my Nashville fans that are listening. I love you guys. That you would do Saturday morning TV Memphis, work in Nashville Saturday night, go for some stupid reason, drive back to Memphis Saturday night, and then do the other cities in the loop were Evansville, Indiana, Louisville, Kentucky, I think Elizabethtown, possibly Chattanooga, possibly Memphis. But he said that you could do something in each different town, and the other towns would never know it because, as you just said, Spoke, we don't have Facebook, we don't have MySpace, Twitter, Yelp, Foursquare. You don't have any of that in the 80s. You had maybe, you know, Nashville to Memphis is 200 miles by car, and then it's 4 hours Nashville to Evansville. You know, as a lot of people like to say, yeah, the internet killed wrestling, but so we're on the internet, so I don't think we're killing it totally. I mean, Mace has been quiet for a while. I'm interested in his thoughts on this topic. If he has any, or is he playing World of Warcraft again?
I'm playing World of Warcraft.
Wait, I've been playing Red Dead Redemption.
Oh, God.
Well, I've been sitting there quiet and just listening to Dutch's stories, and I feel real bad that I didn't actually so he get the balls up to sort of say anything to the dude, but then again, he was answering anything I was going to ask anyway during his stories. What were we talking about again? I'm sorry, I'm blanking at the moment.
Well, he had mentioned the idea of testing stuff at house shows to see how it worked, because I can testify, the Mania that was in Seattle was 19, I believe.
Yes.
I went to I went to a house show at the UFSF Sundome on the campus of the University of South Florida, not South Florida as ESPN likes to call them, the South Florida Bulls, the USF Bulls, get it right, Stanford, people in on the mothership as Dan Patrick likes to call them. At that show, I witnessed Matt Hardy versus Rey Mysterio. House show match, fine. Couple few weeks later, I'm sitting in a friend's living room watching WrestleMania. They did the exact same match, move for move for move. So testing stuff on a house show may work great, sometimes may not.
Well,
but
they did,
in this era, it's a little hard to do. Is it a little hard to do? Because as you said, people like us will go to a show, and then as soon as we're done, we go home and go, I was at WWE in Fort Wright, Kentucky, or wherever, and I saw A, B, C, D, E, F, G. As opposed to back in our day, you would open up Pro Wrestling Illustrated and see the arena results there. That's how you knew what was going on. Now it's all over the place. Wrestling Observer's got every day. They list all the matches from all the areas in the country. We do it here on AllIWorldOfWrestling.com. If you go to our OWW Genesis forum, we do it too. I do it every Friday when I'm at ASW Florida at Stroker's Billiards, or when I would do Pro Wrestling Fusion events or other companies. So I'm just as guilty as other people. And I just killed the topic. I suck at that. God.
No. It would. Mace is lost, so he's in La La Land. It's okay. I would say this. What I think is unfortunate, other than the media, you know, being able to see anything in today's social media, what is extremely unfortunate is that you have an entire generation of wrestling fan who has lost what it means to sit in front of a television either Saturday morning or Saturday night or Sunday morning when USA had this, the what was it?
All-Star Attitude. Wrestling.
Yeah. It was a WWF, but I forget what it was.
Yeah, it was All-Star Wrestling with Mean Gene Okerlund.
Yeah, so, I mean, you had a wrestling show on Saturday morning, and you had one on Sunday morning, and they showed a couple of the same matches on both shows, which was fine. But you have an entire generation of wrestling fan who has lost what it means to be enveloped in the story. And I agree with Dutch when he says the art of playing the game is gone. What is my main bitch all the time? Something that Jake Roberts was famous for. Psychology. They've lost it. Why I love guys like Samoa Joe, CM Punk, Brian Danielson, Nigel McGuinness, guys like that, the Messiah of the Backbreaker, Roderick Strong, they're all throwbacks.
Oh, yeah.
All of them. All of them get it. And they can work in the modern style with the old school tactics. And it's a beautiful meld. And I wish more people... I wish more people would take notice of guys like that. Wrestling is better for having individuals like them in the business today. 100%.
I can attest to that. I totally agree with that. But as I said, we're in a society where, you know, you have the 24-hour news cycle. And when we talked about this when we had Tatanka on, he had mentioned in his era, and this was 1993, 94, where he was put with a Ludwig Borga, the late Tony Holm, or he was put with the late Scott Bam Bam Bigelow. He would work with Bam Bam, and it would be for almost a full year. You know, people always remember, go back to WrestleMania 2 with Hogan and Bundy, and then 3 with Andre the Giant. You would work these guys. Even go back as far as Bret and Owen for fans. I know I'm stretching for some fans that are going, I wasn't even born in 94. Well, I'm sorry. Go to WWE 24/7 and look up one of the greatest feuds in the history of wrestling, and that would be Bret Hart versus Owen Hart. That thing started, for fans that don't remember it, that thing started at Survivor Series 93 and then kicked off big time at Royal Rumble 94 and then went all the way through to Survivor Series 94 where they had somewhat of a blow off, but they kept going. I think they touched so much. That was it. Bret versus Owen was almost a whole year.
Was it Mania or SummerSlam that they had the cage match? Was it SummerSlam was the cage?
Yeah, WrestleMania 10 was New York.
Because Owen won the cage match.
No, Bret won the cage. Owen won at WrestleMania 10. Because after the cage, Jim Neidhart jumped the rail, took out Davey Boy, and set up certain house show feuds that I got to see through that era. That, unfortunately, is long gone. Because now, as you mentioned, even Dutch mentioned it, and when we had Jim Cornette on, he mentioned it. You've got 12 pay-per-views a year. You're putting on these 3-hour Raws. It's almost like you've let the monster out of the cage. Now how many prods do I need to do to get the monster back in his little box? It's getting out of control. I mean, we had the tribute to, look at it tonight. While we're on the air here, last night you had Monday Night Raw. Tonight you had Friday Night SmackDown. Tomorrow night you're going to have a rerun of the tribute to the troops thing. Thursday night, you've got WWE Superstars, and then I think they're going to rerun SmackDown on Sci-Fi on Friday. And then if you have Universal HD on your cable program on Saturday night, you're probably going to see the rerun of Raw, the rerun of SmackDown. It's just oversaturation of the product. Maybe I'm wrong, maybe I'm right. I don't know. I know Mace wanted it. Is this true? Did they really? I sometimes tune out during the "Did you know" WWE things, and as we all know from watching G.I. Joe, knowing is half the battle. That WWE touted that their SmackDown versus Raw 2011 is outselling what games? Say that for me again. What games are they outselling? Supposedly, according to WWE.
Medal of Honor, NBA Live, Harry Potter, Resident Evil, and Guitar Hero. Now, Spud, you can probably attest to this with some of their sales numbers of the other series. Do you think Raw versus SmackDown has sold any more than any of those franchises?
Has it sold any more than Medal of Honor? Probably not. Has it sold more than... Now, are they talking this year's edition? Or
yeah, they're talking Raw.
Actually, this is the thing. In the facts, they have it SmackDown versus Raw has sold more video games than, with a picture of the latest game on the side. So it's hard to tell if they're talking SmackDown versus Raw as a franchise or whether just this particular game.
I bet you they're advertising this year's edition, but I bet you they're talking about the franchise as a whole. I'm not so sure about Medal of Honor, them outselling Medal of Honor, but I would, or Resident Evil, but I bet you they've probably outsold NBA Live.
Well, considering there was no NBA Live this year, that's highly possible. Same with Harry Potter, but no way would they be able to outsell Guitar Hero.
No, they're not selling Guitar Hero. I don't think they're... Well, maybe. Maybe, because Guitar Hero's only been around for 4 years.
I'm not sure. I think Warriors of Rock is the sixth generation of the game.
Right, but I'm talking like it's only been around for 3-4 years. Like, it hasn't been around that long. But SmackDown versus Raw has been around since the late 90s.
Yeah, it's sort of interesting to me because I've always had this in the back of my head that 99% of what they put up on the screen with their Did You Know segments is complete and utter claptrap, or it's something that they've skewed so it makes it sound better than it really is.
Yeah, some of the stuff's just out of there.
Dude,
well, that's the thing.
It's marketing.
Yeah, but still, when they go around and they tout saying that they outdrew Monday Night Football on this day or something, it just happened that there was no games on.
Sucked horribly.
The one that annoyed me was they did one a couple months ago during a Raw when they had said that Raw did you know that WWE and this month of September 2001 outgrew professional sports, and I went, professional sports didn't play for 2 weeks in honor of what happened on the 11th. You know, they didn't play any games, not baseball, not football, nobody. College football, nobody played any games for like 2 weeks. So that's a couple million people who didn't go to sporting events because there weren't any. Fatty, move. You're laying on your bed and it's not right. Come here.
I mean, I'm fine with them saying that, you know, did you know that if you're a member of the U.S. military, if you go to a live WWE event, you will get a ticket to come in for free. I think that's a great fact to see. Or John Cena with his 200th Make-A-Wish thing, that's great. But when you start comparing yourself to a lot of mainstream programming, going, we outdrew the NBA, the NHL, da-da-da-da-da. I'm like, well, the NHL, yeah, it has its own network, but there may not be showing a game that night. And, you know, the NBA may not been on... The NBA's not on TNT the same night that WWE is. Yes,
right.
You're going head-to-head with Monday Night Football, and maybe you ended up getting a game that totally sucked butt. Or, you know, I don't know if Sorokin's a sports fan. Let's get his perspective here. Does that kind of bother you, and they chime off with some of these facts that possibly, like, oh, we outdrew game so-and-so of the World Series, or we outdid them on the... I mean, that happened back in the WCW days. Hulk Hogan used to use that as saying, well, TNT would go... Monday Night Raw would go dark because TNT, TBS is the home of the NBA playoffs for a while before ESPN jumped in. I mean, so Hogan would use that as a fact, going, well, look, brother, you know, I wasn't around, and the ratings went in the toilet, and now I'm back. Look what happened. It's like, yeah, dude, the cult company wasn't on TV.
Rock's not going to talk. You know better.
He said, I have a point, so.
And I started to talk, and I forgot. I, I'm pulled the plug on the mic for a second. The point I was trying to answer your question, Alan, was it's all how they skew those numbers. That's all they do with the ratings. In this demographic, they beat Monday Night Football. In this demographic, they beat Monday Night Football. That's how they skew it, and that's how they can promote it. It's annoying, but it's like Spock said, it's marketing. It's what you do. But here's the did you know for you guys. Did you know WTR is going to have a better award show than the Slammies? Just throwing it out there.
Well, I got another one on that type of thing. Did you know OWW Radio gave you Dutch Mantel for free tonight?
Yeah.
For free!
Oh, wait. Free?
For free.
Gimmick infringement.
Yeah, the for free is gimmick infringement, but for free, that's what happened. An hour-long interview, too. Just saying.
You mean
so feel free to go out there and buy your meals at
McDonald's
people's.
Wait, back the car up here. Maybe because I don't listen to other radio programming on other sites and whatnot, somebody charges money for people
Alan,
to listen to a radio
don't
program?
Don't. Let's just make the joke and move on, shall we?
Okay. Well, I'd like to move on to say thank you for everybody being here with us tonight. I know, do you guys have your best of recap tomorrow night, or did it already air?
No, tomorrow night.
It's on tomorrow night. 9 p.m. Eastern, right here on WildTalkRadio.com. The recap of OTL for 2010.
Oh, Omega goes crazy.
Oh my god, I can't wait to hear that again. That was great. The night that happened was absolutely hilarious. Listen to Mason myself try to hold it in.
Yeah, that's just worth the price of a Happy Meal right there.
Happy Meals are fun. Thursday, Happy Meals, $1.99. Money goes to Ronald McDonald House.
Yes, there you go.
Is that Thursday?
Yeah. Yep, it's Tuesdays and Thursdays. Happy Meals are $1.99, and all the proceeds go to Ronald McDonald House.
Are they going to sell Happy Meals to adults?
Sure, why not? I've seen
I'm being dead serious. My wife, she's got a little stomach. She can't eat a whole lot. And so she'll usually get, like, the big kid's meal from Burger King or the Happy Meal with, like, the double cheeseburger in it. And she's fine with that. She went in for lunch to McDonald's, I want to say, like, a month or so ago. And the lady wouldn't sell her the Happy Meal because she, quote, wasn't a kid.
Oh, please. That's ridiculous.
So they're going to do fundraisers like that. All I want to know is if they're going to sell to adults.
They should. Here's another one. Did you know there's a wrestling show on Friday nights on this network? Well,
there is.
Yeah. Well, supposedly there is, but no one really knows. But maybe they run the ropes. I don't know. I don't know if they're doing it this week. Who knows?
It is Christmas Eve.
It is Christmas Eve. But speaking of Christmas Day, night, CB Radio, midnight-ish, more Subway stories of Santa, and he's going to sing.
I may be there for your Christmas extravaganza.
Part two.
I may be there.
There you go.
We gonna have the holiday contest this year of singing carols.
If you want to.
What did you guys end up giving away last year? I never found out what
stockings.
You guys ended up giving.
Stockings.
What was in it?
Maybe we bought stockings and sent them out.
Oh, you bought, like, the cheap ones from Walmart?
Something like that. Yeah, that's it. Bought stockings.
All right. Yeah. If you don't feel like telling me, don't tell
me. I didn't buy them personally. I paid for them, but I didn't buy them.
Ah, okay.
Okay, I don't know what they looked like. I paid for them, and they were sent out.
Ah.
Visit CindySin.com. Wrestle Talk Radio, Sunday night. Tip it, guys.
No.
Yeah, what do you guys got going the day after Christmas Eve besides saying, oh, my kid's got this? I got this. I got that.
What's wrong with doing that?
That's what we'll be doing Saturday.
I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with it, Spunk. I think it's a great thing to do. I'll be touting next Tuesday what the wife and the kids got me.
The year-end review is WTR this Sunday.
Yeah, we're doing the year-end review. And just spoiler alert, one of the categories, best tag team.
The sharpshooters are tremendous. That's all we got to say about that. Alan Raffles, yeah. Sure.
And Tap Out the Knockouts will be back after the new year with an interview, finally, with John Morgan of MMA Radio.
Wow. Yeah, want to let you know, since everybody else does them, we're not. I don't see us doing an interview because we got a loaded show already. We haven't even finished this one yet. Next week, Sean Oliver, Kayfabe Commentaries, will be stopping by. The Campus Legend, Brad Allen, will be stopping by to go head-to-head with Spug. We may do some predictions for 2011, things that we would like to see happen with TNA, WWE, ROH. Thanks to Brad Dykens, Jason Dedrich, the Big Bosses, for providing me this forum as always. If whether you celebrate it, happy Christmas, Merry Christmas, happy Kwanzaa, happy Hanukkah, happy whatever you
Festivus.
Celebrate on the 25th, 26th, whichever it is. One of the best videos that NXS ever did was Ninja Tonight / Mediate, and that's going to take us out here tonight. Next week is going to be fun. Thanks for joining us on the World of Wrestling Radio. We're done.
My shirt.
Follow Alan on Twitter.
I've got to let you know.
Yep, my name is Wojcik.
There might be a bash in the books this week, you never know.
WildTalkRadio.com.
Talking over the top of the song.
So professional.
Rest in peace, Michael Hutchins.
Depeche Mode was better.
All right. I'm